And that's not all. Buy today and we'll send you completely free.
Ever thought that some offers are just too good to be true?
Yes, that's an incredible 42-piece set for only $19.95. Yes, you heard us.
That you don't generally get something for nothing?
Free! Free! Free!
Well, at PokerStars, you actually do. Because the minute you sign up as a real money player, you automatically join our VIP club and start earning player points towards hundreds of items, from plasmas to Porsches to seats at major poker tournaments. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to see why our rewards program makes other offers seem, well, a lot of hot air. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's Thanksgiving weekend 2010. You're listening to the best PokerCast, or maybe you're not. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You know, it's Thanksgiving weekend. I never really know what to expect from our listeners here. Are they actually listening? I don't know.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. Wake up.
The official
football game's over.
The Annie Up Nation.
Football game's over. You can listen to the podcast now.
Okay, wake up from that tryptophan low and start listening to us. Scott, where were you this week? We were playing in a home game and you weren't there again.
Yeah, what's this home game thing you talk of? I don't think I've played in a home game ever.
It's
been many, many months since I've played in one.
You're not used to playing poker unless you're on a ship now these days. That's kind of weird.
No, I tell you, I feel really bad that I haven't been able to host a home game, and I've missed the last couple that people have had, and haven't been able to help get the numbers up for some of the other games that our folks have been playing and that have got canceled because they couldn't get enough people, and it's really bumming me out. But you know, it's just still it's bad timing all around. But I was happy that you got to play.
Yes, it was our good friend Frank, our columnist and listener. He hosted one. He had a Saturday off, and he's like, "Guys, come on over. I want to play some poker." So I was like, "You know what? I'm gonna go." I've gone to everyone he's ever hosted, and it's always a good time. He always puts out a nice little like spread too. You know, put out like not some sort of, you know, fruit salad and whatever. So it's always nice to see him and his barking dog, Jasper. You know, something came up that I thought you would appreciate. First of all, I want to let you know that Limit Hold'em was called just once over 6.5 hours of poker play, and I called it.
No way! You
I swear
it?
To God, it was the first game I called. I called Limit Hold'em.
You were probably trying to lock in your profits for the game, right?
Yeah, I was in shutdown mode at like
12:15. Well, yeah. You're just locking it down. You're like, oh, I'll play that crappy little Limit Hold'em, and I will not expose myself to any undue risk.
And that was pretty much what I said too. They said, "Chris, it's all your right. call." I said, "CLHE." That's what I said. And the other thing, No Limit Hold'em was called 3 times and never by me. How far have I come?
Oh, man. So, you know, you were just grokking the table.
I was grokking. I was absorbing everything. But, you know,
you're taking everything in, and you're like, you know what? I'm not going to play my normal game here. I'm adjusting and rolling to the temperature. So I give you credit there, buddy.
Well, thanks. But, you know, it's funny. If you listed the games that were called, like, on a piece of paper and passed it around to the home game regulars, they would all know who was there and who wasn't there just by that list. PLO was never called. Who wasn't there?
Yeah, poor Gambit couldn't make it.
Yeah, Gambit couldn't make it. Limit Hold'em called just once. Who wasn't there?
Yep, I wasn't there.
You see what I'm saying? So it's like you know who's there and who's not there just by the game's call. But it was cool. You know, and I think there's a game I want you to hear about. I don't know if you've ever heard of it or not. And Frank called it, and he rubbed it in my face a couple of times that he listens to other podcasts, you know, and he heard this on another show, and apparently this game was enjoyed by Doyle Brunson back when he was, you know, still little Doyle. And I talked to Antonio about it, our friend Antonio Panzari on Poker Wars this Monday. I asked him about it, and he actually knew about the game, and there was a different name that it was called, but what we called it was Poppy Ha. Have you ever heard of this game?
I believe that's what the Afghan warlords play, right?
Poppy seeds! I've tested positive for heroin! But have you ever heard of that game?
I have, no, I have not heard of Poppy Ha.
Yeah,
no.
Well, throughout the day I called it Poppycock, and kind of...
I can only imagine.
Yeah, kind of pissed off Frank a little, but it's a very interesting game.
Chris is always the late adopter in her home games.
I think you might like this game, I don't know, but it's a variation on Omaha.
Okay. All right, I like it already.
All right, well, you get your normal four cards. You have to play your two cards just like in Omaha, but the flop is merely a flip. It's just two cards rather than three.
Okay, all right.
There's only one turn and only one river, so your board only has four cards when it's completed.
Okay.
And the you know, the third card showing is considered the turn, so the bet doubles if you're playing limit. And right. There is a 10 low instead of an 8 low.
Oh, so it's high low. All right.
Yeah, high low, but the low is a 10 fall.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, basically I just stuck with the same Omaha strategy. If I had ace deuce, you know, 3 ace deuce 5 or something like that, I considered playing it. Otherwise, I just basically got out of the way cuz I don't know. Can you think of a better strategy other than playing the way normally with Omaha?
Well, I guess I'm curious as to why there is a 10 high qualifier and why it's not just straight high low.
I think fewer cards are out, so they want to make it easier to make a low.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you don't have a qualifier at all, then it's even easier to make a low.
Oh,
to me, the 8 is like in the middle of the deck, so that's a legitimate qualifier, if you're going to put a qualifier on. If you go anything higher than that, I say just take the qualifier off.
Yeah, but then you're guaranteed only never scooping the pot almost, right?
Oh, yeah, but I mean, really, what was the dynamic change in adding a 10 high? I mean, really, you're eliminating what? Broadways from qualifying for the low? I mean, really.
I don't know.
I mean, I haven't played this at all. I'm just trying, you know, I mean, I just heard about it right now.
I know. That's why I brought it up.
knocking around in the brain cells there. But that's the first thing that occurred to me is, I'm not so sure the 10 qualifier really makes a big difference. But, let's see, as far as strategy, I mean, the big thing, obviously, is that, you know, in Omaha, the great percentage of your hand is defined on that flop.
Yeah.
All right, so the turn and the river are really value bets and nuts kind of cards. So, I mean, if your hand doesn't hit on the flop in Omaha, you need to be getting out. So if there's only two cards on the flop, it's even more pronounced, I would think.
Yeah, I do think there were more folds after the flop than normal Omaha, but I can't recall because I folded a lot of hands and didn't really pay attention. But when I did play, I felt like if somebody bet, almost everybody got out. And if they didn't get out, it's because you knew they had ace-deuce and there were two lows on the board or something. You know what I mean? So I think that's the way it went. You're right.
Yeah,
I think after the initial betting, they were gone.
Yeah, I think just by the structure of that, there would be less call. I would think the pots would be smaller, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they were too.
If I had to put it in the supercomputer.
Yeah, and less betting too, because although I guess there's not fewer rounds of betting because there's still a turn and river, but you know fewer people played the hands. I think it was interesting.
The three cards gives you know sucks those low draws into staying.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, if it's just one low card, you still got to use two. Now you got to go runner to hit your low.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Even the really bad Omaha players, I don't think, would stick around for that. And, you know, I'm making fun there, but I mean, that's part of the profit center in Omaha is you got people that have ace-deuce, and the flop comes with one low card, and they really should be getting out of that hand, but they don't.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, hey, I can go runner. I mean, I guess it's the same thing, because you still got to go runner, but But you're going to get those people right, the step above those players are the ones that you're not going to get in this game.
Right.
Those are the players going, you know, wow, look, it's runner, even though it's the same thing the other way. I think it's more pronounced. So they're going, all right, I'm out.
Yeah,
and you really, I mean.
It's harder, too, because you can see more value in the other two cards while you're trying to make your runner low, maybe, against the cards in your hand, whereas you just got one other card to look at. You're just like, I don't know if I'm going to make a hand with that one other card. You know what I mean? I can see how it's all people would get out in Poppy Ha rather than sticking around like they would in Omaha 8.
I would think that pocket pairs would go up in value. I mean, pocket pairs are not really that great in Omaha, particularly high-low.
Right.
But because of that, knowing that people are more likely to fold, and everybody's really drawing after the flop, to be honest.
Yeah, and there's one less card hit in set. Yeah, so yeah.
I mean, you're going to be drawing. So at that point, a pair could be more powerful. Did you guys play a limit or pot limit?
No, always limit. It was limit.
Okay, pot limit would be even a different game too.
Oh sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I gotta say, Scott's gonna give this the 1.5 thumbs down. And the only reason it's 2's not down is I wasn't there to actually try it. And maybe if I tried it, I'd become 3 thumbs up.
You might have won every pot and loved the game.
Yeah, yeah, I might think it's the best thing ever. So, but yeah, just thinking about it, no, I don't really see it as an improvement, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was just a different variation. But, my argument for the whole day was, can you win a bracelet playing this game? Because if you can't, I really don't want to be part of the home game, And they were just, busting my balls and stuff. So it was fun. We had a lot of fun with it. And I think it got called just once. Maybe because I gave him so much crap over it. I don't know.
I guess I'm going to have to work on trying to get double flop as a bracelet event somewhere then.
That's true. Somebody else made a comment about one of the other games, too. And I was like, hey, no, somebody won a bracelet in that. I think it was Pineapple. I think there was actually a bracelet at some point. I don't know.
That's true. There is Pineapple. Now, you and Fassel probably got into a fight over 5-card stud then.
No, we actually didn't. He did call it, and how the first pot that reaches over $5 in that game, he's always first to say, see, I told you, big pots in this game. It's better than that no-limit hold'em. And I'm like, yeah. Well, when you hear about the hand I had a little later on, you'll know that no-limit hold'em is always king for the big pots. So that segues right into my next point. John Lanier, our online columnist, showed up at the home game.
Yep,
and he has a new nickname, Johnny Quads. We're gonna call him
Johnny Quads. I like it.
This man made quads 3 times in the home game. That's once every 2 hours. Okay,
wow.
And considering how slow our dealers are in our home game, that's like 1 every 4th hand. Okay, I mean this guy made quads 3 times and a straight flush, and straight flush in a regular game. All right, so. He's banned from the home game now. But you know what? The funny thing is he made quads 3 times and a straight flush and still lost $80.
Wow.
How do you do that?
Well, I can tell you how to do it if you want me to get serious here. And the fact that generally it depends on when he got the quads. I mean, those are usually action killer flops or action killer hands. So
we'll find out.
Just because you have a monster hand doesn't mean you're going to get paid off on it. So
right, right. Okay,
that would be my Sherlock Holmes preliminary ruling.
Well, one of the things was the straight flush came when he was all in for like $3
or not even. Okay.
So he ended up making like $9 on that hand. So that was one of the things. But later on, he was already down a buy-in. So we're playing No Limit Hold'em, and he's I think he's on he's on my left, okay? And I get dealt pocket queens, and it's no limit hold'em. So I do the standard raise, and I think it was like 25 cent, 50 cent at the time or whatever. So I think I made it like 150 or $2. And then I think John pops it to like 5. So it gets folded back around to me, and I just call. I was trying to trap him. And so the flop comes queen, 9, 8, 2 diamonds. So I've got queen, 10-9. I have two diamonds, and so I have top set, and there's 2 diamonds on the board, and a straight draw, of course, a possible straight. So I think I bet right out like $5 or something like that, and he raises to 10. So I call. The turn's a 4 of diamonds. So now I check to him because of the diamonds, and I'm not sure if he has a straight or not, and so I check. Probably should have bet, but I check. He bets like what I think is 10 or 15. I think it's 10. So I call, and he has about 30 or 40 left behind him, and I have like, at that time, I was up about $80 on the day. I was doing pretty well. So the river is a 10. So now I've got a full house, queens over 10s, and I look at his stack, and I was like, John, how much do you have left? And he's like, about 40 or so. And I said, all right, I'm all in. And he goes, I call.
Were you all in, or did you put him all in?
No, I said, I'm all in. I didn't put him all in because I didn't want to be a Deutsche Bank. But I said, all right, I'm all in. And he goes, I call. And I'm like, yes. And he turns over pocket 10s.
Ends.
So he had quad tens, and I had queens full of tens, and it doesn't even register for like a bad B. Like if we were at the Hard Rock, yeah, I wouldn't even right. won the mega, you know.
Yeah.
But boom. So that got him, like, you know, pretty decent stack, but he was still stuck, obviously. And that was toward the end of the day. I had like an hour and a half to still squeak out a $35 profit. Really, I mean, he one outer, and I'm saying to myself, pair the board, because I'm hoping he doesn't have a flush or whatever. Then when it pairs the board, I'm thinking he has the flush, and that's why I put them all in. And he has quads. I can't win. I can't win, Scott. How many times am I going to flop top set and lose to a one outer in the last 2 months? It's three times it's happened to me. Oh, man, and all live.
That's
brutal.
$4 you owe me.
That's only one bad beat.
I'm keeping the cash cab meter running here.
Oh, man, it was pretty brutal. But I think if you asked everyone at the home game, I took it like a gentleman, didn't swear, and I just paid him, and we kept playing. So well, I'm growing as a person.
Well, you know, I'm getting worried, buddy. I don't think I'm going to come pick you up someday, and you're not even going to look the same. I'm going to be like, hey, is Chris here? And I'm like, Scott, it's me. I'm like, really? Why are you wearing that sweater around your neck? And
why is your hair blonde?
You're transforming all over the place here.
It was unbelievable that I did that. And I didn't say any, like, you know, unbelievable, Jesus Christ. I didn't do nothing like that. I was just like, wow. All right, here you go. I mean, it was easier to take knowing that I still had, like, $4 profit on the day after losing that hand and, you know, ground out a $35 win after all that. But, you know, I think if I had gone broke, like, if Frank – because Frank killed the game, by the way. Frank killed it. If Frank was in the hand with me and he had flop quads, I'd have gone broke. And then I'd have – not flop quads, but river quads. I'd have gone broke, and then I might not have been so nice, you know. But, wow. What a home game you missed, really. You missed a really good time, and a lot of funny stuff happening. And Faso streak ended. That was interesting. I was happy to see that him go home with less than he came with. Because, you know, he pulls up in front of the house, and he's like, yeah, Frank said there were some cancellations, but I was so happy to see your car out in front when I pulled up.
Yes, I love it.
I said, how happy are you now? Because, well, frankly, I walked away with a profit, and you lost. So, whatever, buddy. But we had a great time. We had a lot of fun, and the usual suspects were there.
Well, I feel bad that I was not there, but I unfortunately had the very brutal task of sailing on a preview cruise of the Lure of the Seas, Chris.
The Lure of the Seas.
World's largest cruise ship by 5 centimeters over a sister ship, Oasis by the Sea. And I believe it's 5 pounds, too. So, you know, it's like a little F you to the Oasis there. That the captain was very happy about, but brand new Royal Caribbean ship, and you know, they're doing these little preview cruises. The actual cruise, first cruise, is like December 1st or something like that. But they're doing like little 2-night cruises, work the kinks out, and they invite travel professionals on board, which of course I am not.
Right.
But you know, since we do so much poker cruise business with them, they thought I'd come anyhow. And open bar. Which is the best part of the ship.
For the whole time?
The whole time.
Wow.
So, to be honest, I didn't really see most of the ship, but I can tell you about the bars, and they are fantastic. but I did happen to stumble down to the Casino Royale when I was on board, Chris.
Yes.
And very, very nice casino. And, of course, a brand new ship. You expect it to be new, and it's the biggest cruise ship, so you'd expect it to be pretty big. It was all that. I was surprised, however, to see that they actually had a real, quote-unquote, how about a quasi-real? Just because I like the word quasi.
Quasi-real
poker room in the actual casino.
Wow.
And I don't know how many cruise ships actually have this. You know, I mean, usually when you're on a cruise ship, unless it's the Antioch Poker Cruise, by the way, you're lucky if they have like one poker pro table in the middle of the pit, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't even get that. Sometimes you get like a blackjack table and they put somebody there. Hey, we're playing Hold'em today.
Yeah.
Everybody sitting around the high chairs. So, the fact that they actually, had a quasi poker room was impressive to me. Now, when I said quasi, it was still kind of open to the rest of the casino, but they had some like curved walls and kind of a little entrance way. So it's not like right smack dab in the middle of it.
Okay.
And a big screaming poker on the side of it, big signage. So I think they did the best they could in making it look like a poker room. Now, of course, when you get inside, yeah, it's those dreaded poker pro tables.
Yes.
They had 3 of them, though. And they deal 1, 2, 2, 5, and 5, 10 no limit, according to the sign.
Okay.
They didn't have them on when I was in there, so I didn't check the rake. But
well, I can tell you the rake.
Yeah, but yeah, admittedly, the rake is going to be pretty bad.
It's 75% up to 100%.
75% up to 100%.
Oh, the rake's pretty bad on those ships, I got to say.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm going to mention this, too. I mean, and not at all in defense of the rake, which is inhumane. But the rake, to be honest, really doesn't matter if the players are really bad.
No, that's true.
I mean, if you win every hand of poker, it doesn't really matter what the rake is. You're still going to walk away a winner, you know? So, and generally speaking, when you're playing poker on a cruise ship, you're playing against idiots. And so, you know, I think these people that are like, oh, yeah, so the rake was 10% of $25, and I'm like, forget that. I think they're not grokking the situation and understanding that there's some profit to be made there. And it's not like the neighborhood casino where they can walk across the street or drive across the city. I mean, unless you're a really good swimmer, that's going to be the only poker room on your cruise. But so anyhow, I didn't ask for that. But, you know, three Poker Pro tables, nicely spaced out, so you weren't crowded there. But the really cool thing, I thought, is they had three of those Poker Pro heads-up tables in the room as well.
Oh, you mean the heads-up machines that I destroyed you at the expo at the World Series that time?
Yeah. I didn't quite remember that way, but I appreciate you reminding me of that very lucky day you had.
Yeah, I was very lucky.
But, yeah, machines. And, again, everything was off at the point. If I was sober when they actually was open, I would have gone back down and done a little bit more research. But you don't see them very much anymore. I mean, I know PokerTech, the company that makes them, I think really kind of marketed them to bars.
Yeah.
You know, and where you can't play for money, you put your dollar bills in, you play for pride points, and you know, it's poker, so that doesn't really make sense. I noticed they had like a little dollar slot on there, so I don't know whether you could actually play for money on them. I really hope so, since it's a casino environment there.
Yeah.
And so that would be really cool, because then I could sit around. I could see some nice heads-up battles, because you don't get to play that very often. You certainly can't do that in a live room normally.
Right.
They're not going to open up a table for heads-up play, you know, unless you're playing for
thousands.
$5,000-$10,000.
Yeah.
But, you know, so, you know, I give them props there for elevating poker's place on cruise ships. And, you know, again, it doesn't compare to the Antioch Poker Cruise, obviously. But if you're really rich and you can afford to go in the lure, at least, you know, you've got a poker room you can play on.
That's a nice little segue you got there, too, buddy, right? I'm assuming that you're going to bring up the Antioch Poker Cruise any minute now.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, we know our listeners can't afford the allure. I mean, that baby is expensive. You know, there's one there, they showed us all the suites, and there's this one suite that's, like, for families, and it's got two bedrooms, two bathrooms, two full baths, a dining room, a living room, and a huge balcony that overlooks the water show.
Man.
And I'm like, oh, all right, so I asked at dinner, I'm like, yeah, what's that going to set me back, if you don't mind, the little Royal Caribbean lady eating with us? And she's like, about $14,000.
Oh my god!
And you know, I choked on my steak a little bit, and then I'm like, and then somebody said, "That's per person, right?" She's like, "Yeah, per person." I'm like,
oh no!
Gosh! I turned to my wife, and I'm like, "I'm gonna have to win like three lotteries before I allow myself to pay $14,000 per person for a 1 week cruise."
Wow!
No matter the accommodations,
you could buy your own ship for $28,000.
That's right.
Oh my god, that's crazy.
Yeah. So it's an expensive ship. So folks out there, if you're waiting for Antioch Poker Cruises to book the Oasis or the Allure, keep waiting. We know you're all on a budget, and we're not going to subject you to that. But however, we have booked three cruises coming up for next year, all on very moderately priced ships. First one is March 7th on the Navigator of the Seas, going out of Fort Lauderdale, going to Haiti, going to Jamaica. And that Haiti island, really cool, Chris, by the way. I watched the little video in the room on the flat screen TV,
Yeah. And
I'm looking forward to going to the private island in Haiti.
Can you get a copy of that video and give it to my mom, please?
I might.
She's like, Haiti? What do you mean you're going to Haiti? I'm like, yeah, Mom, one of the excursions is to go help with the relief effort. She's like, what? I'm like, no, Mom, it's a private island in the Haiti area, you know. She's thinking that there's going to be an earthquake when I go there. And I'm like, Mom, calm down. It's Haiti, a private island in the Haiti. You know, she's convinced that I'm going to die on these cruises. I swear to God. So get that video for her. Yeah, I
absolutely.
Know,
I'll work on that. I'll
thanks.
Work on that.
Appreciate it.
But hopefully by the time everybody's listening to this, our booking form should be open. It'll definitely be ready before Black Friday, Friday morning. And, you know, Chris, I don't know about you, but I don't really understand why people need to get up at 3 a.m., go camp out at Best Buy, get trampled by old ladies when they can just get up in the morning in their jammies and go down and buy a poker cruise for for themselves, for the wife, for the husband. Dad, the mom, the kids, you know, it's great. It's a couple clicks on our new secure online booking form, and boom.
It's such a sale. It's a safe environment. It's secure. You're in the comfort of your own home. What more could you ask for?
Yeah, you know, and I noticed I go to the SantaClaus.com, and, you know, where they print the letters from kids this year. And the number one request this year, Chris, is an NEA poker cruise.
That's right, because they know that there are plenty of things for activities and stuff for the kids to do on those ships, and that's where they want to be.
Exactly. So, you know, I jazz hands out to all the kids out there. We appreciate you getting mom and dad on board with booking one of our cruises. So, but all three of our cruises will be open for booking, including the August 29th Port Canaveral cruise and the December 10th New Orleans cruise. So book early and often. First 10 cabins on all cruises. Big discount. Well, not big discount, but discount. It's like $20-25 per person, so but only for the first 10. So early bird gets the poker worm.
We had at least 3 listeners on this last cruise, right? I think it was
at least 3, probably more than that,
probably
actually.
Probably more. So I'm hoping to break that record.
Yeah, absolutely.
Book absolutely. Now.
And that's AnnieUpMagazine.com/cruise. And we should have all the details updated on that, and you can book right there.
But before, in the meantime, you can also play Apes, right? That's coming up Saturday, the 27th of November, noon Eastern time, and it's horse. I won't do my Mr. Ed impression, but it's my favorite game. I'm looking forward to that one, noon Eastern time, and the free roll for it is Saturday.
Well, nope.
Oh, no, you know, we actually already had the free roll for it, right?
Yep, I didn't update the notes there, sorry. The next free roll you can find on AnnieUpMagazine.com/apes, A-I-P-S. There you go. It's all by design.
But it is
I'm
a Saturday.
Of coddling her.
The next free roll is probably a Saturday, maybe. No, I don't know.
It's always alternate. Right. I believe it's, to be honest, actually, it's going to be December 3rd.
Okay.
9 p.m. Eastern. Look at that. Off the top of my head. And I believe the game is Hose. I could be wrong. Maybe it's No Limit Hold'em. Yeah. It's something that you're going to line up play, but it's 9 p.m., and then that'll be for the event on December 10th. See, look at that save.
Awesome. Nice job, buddy.
But we'll see how many people show up for the horse event. You know, it's a little day after Black Friday, so as long as they're not trampled in the emergency room still.
Yeah, yeah.
They're watching football, and it'll be good to see everybody.
Yeah, very exciting, very exciting. Of course, if I don't play, it's because I didn't have a computer with me that worked properly, because I'm going to be on the road. So if I don't play, don't get mad at me, but I'm doing my best to try to play in it, so don't be mad. But we have some feedback. Your favorite portion, we should have like Jimi Hendrix playing the guitar up close to his Marshall stacks and as our little sound bite for this thing. But all right, so anyway, Jaram calls in and he said he likes the idea of that mulligan ship we talked about.
Hey guys, it's Jeremy from Cincinnati calling. I can't remember if it was last week or the week before you guys were talking about wouldn't it be nice to be able to pull back your all in if you push and the person calls. Well, wouldn't that be a nice wrinkle maybe for a home game if you paid an extra, say, $5 or something at the beginning of the tournament that went to the pot and you were allowed a chip that one time and one time only during the tournament when you shoved, if the person called, you could then retract your shove and the person who called, of course, would get the pot as it stands. They would know not to put their cards up immediately if you shoved and had that chip. Maybe you'd announce it or something like that. I just think that could be a fun little wrinkle, and there could even be some interesting counter strategy, like person pushes all in and I snap call, thinking that that'll force him to say, well, I'm pulling my chips back, almost like a snap call bluff.
Well, you know, hey, I like how creative our listeners get.
Yeah, that they learn to incorporate it somehow in their own game or whatever.
We throw out these BS ideas left and right on the show every week. And these people go, you know what? Scott and Chris, you're laughing about it, but I think there's something to it. Let's add these rules and wrinkles here, and It could be good. I mean, hey, you're extra $5. You could buy a chip. I mean, it'd be great if you could buy as many as you want.
Right.
And but then the strategy's right. You know, somebody pushes all in. You're like, you know what? He's got a mulligan chip there. I'm going to be a bravado here, man. Ooh, I call. And he's like, oh, you called. You know, here's my mulligan chip. Yes, if you take down the pot, that's awesome.
It's the equivalent of sort of the deuce to seven game, that, you know, deuce seven game that people play, or seven deuce, whatever, where they, you know, if they win with seven deuce, they ever has to pay him. So, but let me ask you this now. One thing I was confused about, apparently he made it for a tournament, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So do you get, like, all right, so you get to win the pot, but do you get, like, the equivalent, like, is it a bounty chip sort of thing where at the end of the tournament you get to cash it in for that $5? You know what I mean? Is that something that, or does that just go to the prize pool?
I think it just stays in the prize pool.
Oh, okay. That's what I would say, too. If, you know, hey, you lost this pot, or you win this pot, but not exactly what you would have won, but as a consolation, here's a $5 chip that you get to put in your pocket and cash it in.
Yeah, but I guess there's not going to be anyway, it's kind of like the hidden immunity idol in Survivor, right?
Which is never hidden.
right, and it's but you know, right? Hey, if you got it, you got to play it by now. So it's the same way, right? You know, at some point, I would be even heads up. I'm pushing all in a bunch, right?
Yeah.
At some point, I'm like, you know what? Hey, I'm gonna use it now.
Oh, you know, I forgot to tell you too. That was something we did in the home game. Frank passed out these little plastic chips. And everyone got one, and during the day, at any point, you could use it to have someone show you their hand, you know, after the hand was over. So, like, oh, if you thought somebody was bluffing, you could say, all right, I'm going to use my chip, and you throw it to the guy, and they had to show the bluff or show your hand or whatever it was. So, it was kind of fun. You know, I was making fun of Frank. I'm like, so, no, I just show up at your house, and because it's your home game, I have to do what you say. I don't want to show my hand. I have to because you said it. Do I also have to, like, pull down my pants and sing the Star Spangled Banner if you tell me to do it because it's your house and it's your home game? I mean,
this is a dangerous precedent because the next time if I make it to Dr. Frank's game, I'm going to say, hey, here's some white chips. If I throw a chip at you, you got to get Botox from me.
Exactly.
The Red Bamboo Metaspa in Clearwater, Florida. Good deals.
Oh, man. So.
Yeah, that's a danger. That's a slippery slope there,
exactly,
Dr.
Exactly, exactly. So it's the same thing with this, you know, $5 home game tournament chip mulligan thing, you know. But I really feel like if somebody's, like, how do you think John Lanier would have felt if I had gone all in and he calls with the quads and I go, oh, holy kidding, here's a $5 mulligan chip instead of the $160 pot that you would have won. You know what I mean? It's like, he's not going to be happy about it. So I feel like he should at least get a chip.
But he keeps his chip, though. So, you know, he wins the pot, right? You should be happy about winning the pot.
Yeah, but he would have won the pot anyway. And
remember those old days when we were walking to the poker room uphill both ways? People didn't complain about how much money you won. You were happy with the pot. Now all of a sudden there's all these bells and whistles out there and kids walking the lawn and, you know.
We had to shovel our way to the cage.
Exactly. Crazy, crazy.
Oh, man. Well, that's pretty funny. Well, I'm glad Jerem got a kick out of it and might actually do it. If he does use it, let us know. We'll see how that turns out. See if any fists fly, throwing some hands at the home game.
Yeah, I mean, because the interesting thing, what if it's a multi-way pot?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can't.
I guess if you throw your mulligan chip in, then you're just out, so the person it'd play out, right? So, yeah, all right, never mind. I answer my own question.
That's crazy, though. It's still
no need to call the hotline next week to tell me how stupid I am, at least about that.
Yeah, just annihilate them on the forum like you're used to doing. So. Don't worry about calling in. Okay, our Annie Up news desk is ripe with some news. What do you got for us?
All right, Harrah's, now known as Caesars Entertainment, has added two more circuit stops in 2011, including its first event in Florida. Palm Beach Kennel Club will be the third non-Harrah's venue to host a circuit event when the February 17th to March 1st. I've got to get my new calendar here. February 17th to March 1st event arrives, and the April 28th to May 9th event at Harrah's Chester will be the first circuit stop in Pennsylvania.
That's pretty cool. You know, they're really adding the events. And we knew that was going to happen. We kind of knew that was going to happen with both of these things, sort of, in a roundabout way, right? I mean, we kind of knew.
Yeah.
We just didn't know when and whatever. But it's good. It's in our coverage area, so we're happy about it. More work for us because, you know, we're slave to the grindstone. So we're happy about that.
No. But, yeah, I'd be excited to see more. I mean, I wonder, what's the cap on circuit events, Chris?
It has to be no
you
more.
You think eventually it'll get 12. Where they're literally back-to-back?
Yeah, it's close to that already.
Where, like, you got to get on a plane and boom, you're at the next one?
Yeah. It's like one every month now. It's crazy. All right. The New Jersey State Senate approved an internet poker bill 29-5 this week. The bill would allow only players from New Jersey and residents of foreign countries to play on the site. The measure needs to get through the state assembly and the governor's signature, however, before it becomes law. On the flip side, Party Gaming has filed a motion seeking to end the Kentucky online gambling domain seizure case.
Win some, lose some, don't we?
Yeah, it's like that every week.
Yeah, well, I mean, but here the Kentucky thing is still going on. That thing I'm still not worried about. It's just more of an irritant.
Yeah.
But this New Jersey thing, I think it's picking up some steam here. I mean, I still got a couple ways to go, but people were talking about the spread on the vote. I mean, 29-5.
That's huge.
That's a pretty big spread for any bill. So I mean, it's going to give them some hope. But you know how the politics are. You can never count on anything, right?
Yeah, and I think it's kind of weird that only players in the state and outside the state, you know, outside the country, I mean, could play in it. It's kind of weird. It's like saying, you know, Harrah's Atlantic City isn't going to have people from New York or Connecticut playing in their casino. I mean, that's kind of weird. What's the big deal? Just, you know, why?
Well, I mean, here's part of the thing is that New Jersey doesn't have the power to compel or allow other state. I mean, they can only control their own state. That's why everything. That's why we keep pushing, and the PPA keeps pushing for the federal bill because.
Right. Right.
Congress passes it, then states can opt out of it. But you know, if New Jersey Senate says, "Hey, online poker in every state," imagine there's going to be like 49 other states that say, ha, ha, "Sorry, ain't
no,
going to happen." But
I know, but so, I mean, it's just weird, isn't it? It is kind of weird to me.
I mean, that's what you got to do. And to be honest, the fact that they're allowing foreigners in, I think, is a huge coup because that's the problem with the Florida bill that we had last year, and I think it's coming back next year. Hopefully, they'll take a lesson from this and open it up to folks outside of the United States because that's what you need. You need to get the player base in there. If you have just one state, you're not going to have enough players.
Right. Now, is this like a site that they'll make? That
I think,
so you could still have like Poker Stars, you know, that people could play on, but this alone is the only site that... Okay, so that makes sense. I think Florida was trying to make it that you could only play online poker in your state on
their
site.
Well, no,
right?
I don't think it specifically said that, but I mean, I think that's the goal. I think some of these lawmakers think that this will shut out the other online sites, which it won't. And to be honest, I haven't read the whole New Jersey bill, so maybe they have a corollary in there where it bans it. I can't imagine they would, but I mean... you need to have enough people, or it's not worth it. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I agree. Well, at least it's a step in the right direction.
And I don't know if this is a step in the right direction, Chris. You can answer it. But finally, Phil Hellmuth has authored a series of 5 poker ebooks called Phil Hellmuth's Legendary Poker Hands. Kind of whimsical little name there.
I'm wondering who decided it was legendary. I'm assuming it's him.
The books, each at least 22 pages long, are available for just $2.99 each online.
Huh. I wonder if he sells audio clips of him calling you an idiot, too, or donkey.
I you know, that might be more marketable, to be honest.
I would think so.
Imagine, you know, if you call me, my new ringtone would be unreal. That would be awesome.
Yeah, it would be good. I mean, you know, and you could actually, like, insert your name into the audio clip, so he could be like, "You're just an idiot," and then it'll be like a computer voice making your name for you. So it'd be like, "You're just an idiot, Scott." You know, that would be awesome. That'd be awesome.
I would definitely buy that. But no, I give him credit. I mean, $2.99. I mean, it's 22 pages. I mean, if you divide the super system down, I mean, that's a much better deal. But you know, you want a little taste. You know, a little $2.99. That's not bad.
Yeah, it's like 70 cents a page.
I mean, the question is whether the stuff is really good or they're just poker stories. I mean, with those legendary poker hands, you know, there could be a lesson in there. There could be just a story in there. It could be both. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I really care to read the story.
I don't know. What did I say? 12 cents a page? It's like 12 cents a page. I guess it's not that big a deal. 12 cents a page. I might pay that. Man, if I go to Kinko's, it costs me more than that to duplicate something, so...
I would see that letter that you write to Phil Hellmuth's LegendaryPokerHands.com product support. I made 12 cents a page for this book, and I wouldn't pay more than a dime for it.
Oh, man. Okay, our hotline is ringing. It's 813-448-1120. You know, if you call it and we use it, we give it. So this one comes from Todd in Indiana.
Hi, my name's Todd. I live in Indiana. A friend of mine, Jason from Michigan, turned me on to you guys' podcast. I'm catching up on all the late episodes. Came across the one where you guys debated whether you should dump at an easy game to get invited back or if you should take all the money and, you know, if you don't get invited back because you're too good, that's fine. I would say dump like a champ. Give every dime back you can to get invited back. Grandpa used to say you can shear a sheep many times, but you can only skin it once. Work on your tells, work on noticing other things, but definitely do not take all their money, get invited back, use it to build your bankroll, play in other games. It's probably the smartest thing to do, just because you definitely want to get back to a game that pays you money on a regular basis. Have a good day. I love the show.
See, great minds think alike, Scott. I mean, you have to chip dump here. You have to.
Oh, wow. You know, I guess so. I don't know. I don't know how much fun it is to chip dump. I just don't get it. Yeah, I mean, he's right. I mean, this is the stuff we talked about before in the show, that you can work on different moves and things. And I might even been in support of it then. I don't remember. But to me, I don't know. I would just rather go play somewhere where I can be competitive.
Yeah, I know.
I have to worry about playing these extra grokking moves.
Well, here's the deal. You make enough money from this game to go play in your other game that makes you feel good about being competitive. How's that? So that way, your other game.
But you get a dump in this game to stay in it. So when are you going to allow yourself to win? That's the question.
You don't dump every week. You win 50 one week, you lose 10 the next. You win 50 one week, you lose 10 the next. And that way, you're always guaranteed 40 every 2 weeks. It's like $20 a week.
Well, is my time worth that?
Well, I mean, it could be more than that. It depends on the stakes, you know what I mean? But I'm just giving it for instance.
Yeah, but I mean, I could go into any other game, and I'm free to win every week.
Or lose every week. This is guaranteed money. You know what I mean? It's like a bond.
It's like a bond. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's a treasury bond. It's a low interest. Win, get a couple pennies over 20 years.
Series EE T-bill or whatever.
Yeah, excellent.
Oh, man.
He had a savings bond on the swag shelf that I could send Todd. Could hold on to it for 20 years and cash it in for $4 or something. Instead, I'm going to send him a deck of those J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Anti-Up. And the good thing is you can take those right out of the box and play them now. The value will be consistent, I would think.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, our mailbag comes from Larry. I'm assuming he's not the same Larry on Three's Company.
No, I think it's Larry from the Three Stooges.
Oh, okay, because there's no last name or anything. So, I mean, it could be all kinds of Larrys out there.
Yeah, and when they send the last name in, we get to make fun of them for it. So, so either you're Larry from Three's Company or Larry Fine from Three Stooges. Next time, you'll remember to put your last name on it.
He says he's a longtime listener of the show, which is awesome. We appreciate it. But if you're a longtime listener, we would know your last name. So I'm trying to figure that out. He says he's hoping to get our opinions on a controversy that occurred during the finals of their home game league. He said it's set up to have two sessions a year. It's a bi-monthly tournament. Points are collected. 1 point position, blah, 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 and all that stuff, whatever. So the top nine during each session plays in the final, and the player that finished eighth in this particular session couldn't make the big tournament. So he called a player that wasn't in the top nine to play for him, never called the tournament directors, never told anybody this was going to happen, and they didn't actually know until about 15 minutes before the tournament was about to begin. The tournament directors immediately said there's no way the replacement would play in the final. The controversy actually was whether the final should be played with eight players or go to the next player in points. And he also says, keep in mind that 10th was actually tied by two players, and only one of those players were actually on the premises playing in a side game or whatever, and the other guy wasn't even there. So in the end, they played with just eight players, and said apparently there's some hard feelings about this and wanted to know how we would have ruled.
Well... You know, this is why people buy insurance on your house and your car, you know, because if you wait until something happens, it's hard to unring the bell, right?
Yeah.
And you can't think of every scenario when you set up one of these things, but easily I would think one of the things you got to keep in mind when you're doing something far in advance is what happens if somebody can't make it. There's going to be all kinds of reasons people can't make it. You know, maybe you got to work that day. You know, you got to take the kids in the hospital. You got to take them or something. Maybe you're traveling. So I it's kind of odd to me, to be honest, that no one thought that this might be a problem and that it hasn't been a problem up until now.
Yeah, I think the first tiebreaker is common opponents, and then after that you go to conference title record. And so I think that they should have instituted the NFL tiebreaker rule here. But I agree with you. I can't imagine having a system, especially with like so few points given per position. So there's an easy way for this to tie, you know, at the end. They really should have thought that out.
I mean, for example, in our Apes, our tournament of champions, if you can't make it, too bad, so sad.
Yeah.
Blind it off.
Yep. Yep. You know, that's the way it goes. I do have to say that I agree with their final ruling, though.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Right. Yeah, you can't just... You can't, like, you know, call on Mariano Rivera from the bullpen to come in, close this bad boy out for you.
Yeah,
you know,
no
if way. You can't make it, you can't make it. And now, I mean, I guess, this is where, had they had something written down, you could go to the next person as an alternate. But it's tied. One person's there, one person's not. You can't do that now.
Yeah, you can't arbitrarily pick the guy and say, hey, you know what, you're here, so you get to play for this. And the other guy's going to be ripping mad. So, and you're right. I mean, if there was a system in place, the guy who couldn't make it, who was in eighth, would have known to call the guy in 10th or whatever the tiebreaker system is or whatever it is, and none of this would have happened. It would have been approved because it was in the rules and stuff. So kind of weird that we're talking about this on a poker show, but it's true. I mean, it's true that you really need to think ahead about all scenarios.
Now, I guess a disagree is one thing. And they didn't really say whether this or not, so if they didn't do it, I think they should have. But I think it should have been nine-handed with a dead stack. Because that guy qualified to be there, and maybe he gets there late, and he's still got chips. Just because he's not there, I don't think he'd get booted out of the tournament. I mean, I could go either way on it, but I think,
chips
should be a play.
What's the rule at casinos? Isn't it the first break? After the first break, they pull the stacks?
Yeah, but those are people that haven't bought stacks yet. You're putting stacks out hoping they're selling them. I mean, it'd probably be based on a casino how they do it if you have a qualifying event. I mean, let's say, for example, the Florida Million, which is going on here in Florida for the second time. It's going to finish up in a couple weeks. You know, if a player qualifies and doesn't make it, I don't think they take those chips out of play. I think they get blinded off. And same thing what happens at the World Series November 9th.
Yeah.
Somebody can't make it there. I don't think they're just going to take their chips out of play, are they?
No. But that's what I was wondering was this is like a final table sit and go where they all start the same amount of chips, though. So that's why I wouldn't put a blank stack in there, just sits there and gets blinded off.
But that guy qualified to be there. I mean, just because he's not there.
Right, but you qualify in a free roll, that stack eventually gets removed, doesn't it? Like, say
I don't know. Like I said, it depends on the casino, I imagine. Yeah. I mean, I could make an argument either way, but... You know, I mean, let's spin it a different way. Let's say there's nothing written down, which obviously there wasn't. This guy couldn't make it, right?
Right.
Calls his buddy, says, hey, can you go play for me? I can't make it. All right. Then the buddy calls, hey, these Deutsche Banks won't let me play. And the buddy's like, well, that's not fair. And finds a way to change his schedule and motors over there. At this point, as the tournament's already started, he has no chips. Now what do you do? Now you've created another problem. If you still have chips in there, at least you can say, hey, all right, you're here now. Jump in there and finish off.
Yeah. Huh. Well, that's interesting. I wonder, I think that if it was our home game, we would probably just give the guy a stack and guesstimate how many blinds he missed and throw him in somewhere. I don't know. But yeah, you're right. It's just a can of worms, baby. Can of worms.
Just like everything, prenups. Got everything written down.
This is why I don't play poker leagues.
But, you know, I mean, a bigger point, too, is that, I mean, there's a lot of these things going out there. I mean, where people are putting money in, and then they send somebody to the World Series on behalf of everyone. They're awesome. It's a great way of getting in the action at the World Series, something like that. But, you know, you got to have that stuff. There's got to be a lot written down. I mean, the last one I was approached on, the guy's like, you know, it was like a 12-page manual where they encountered or they anticipated any potential problem, because you know you got money on the line. You don't want to have you don't want to be in a situation at the end of it. Now this is a you know it sounds like a fairly fun home league. I mean there might have been money involved, but you know you just got to think of those. You got to kind of think through everything ahead of time.
Yeah, I mean I wouldn't be surprised lawsuits you know could be derived from something like this.
Oh, easily.
Which would be pretty funny, you know. You're playing poker illegally, but I'm still suing you for the money I could have won that I wouldn't have claimed in my taxes and sent me to jail anyway.
Well, we don't know where Larry's playing. Maybe he's playing in a place where it's legal. So.
No, I know. But, I'm just joking.
But yeah, that's one more wrinkle. How's that? Tell the cops, hey, you wouldn't let me play. It reminds me of those guys, hey, yeah, 911, yeah, someone just stole my marijuana. Can you come out and arrest him? Yeah, sure, we'll be right there, sir. Have a bag of chips.
That's hilarious.
All right, well, Larry, we appreciate it, and we are going to send you a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys at PMSPokerware.com, and I'm going to suggest put it in writing as the shirt that she should make this week. How about poker? Put it in writing. There we go.
Oh, man. That's a lot better than last. What was last week? Last week it was pretty dirty. We were dirty.
No, I don't know. I think Ivan from last week actually liked some of the ones that we're coming up with.
Okay. Mine was something about, no, sir, you may not tap me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Robin to PMS, she's not afraid to push the envelope a little bit.
I love that shirt, man. I'd love to see that shirt on somebody. That'd be hilarious. One person I'd love to see that shirt on is Columbo while he's riding along in his sedan. Last week we folded, we were chicken, but this week now the blind are 2,000, 5,000 with a 500 ante. We have a quarter million in chips. Middle position player opens for almost 23,000. We're in the big blind. It gets folded to us. We have ace of spades, the prettiest card in the deck, and the queen of spades. How do we want to play this, Scott?
All right, we got a lot of chips, right? 220,000.
Yeah.
So I think we can easily raise, can take control of this hand if we want to. The thing is, I think I join 95% of the poker playing population in saying that I hate ace queen.
Yes.
Especially when I'm out of position. So the fact that you know we're looking at about roughly 10% of our stack, we're not out of line to make a call here. So I think what I'm going to do here is I'm going to make a call, but I'm not going to be it's not going to be a chicken call.
Okay.
I'm going to call with the anticipation that on most flops that I'm going to come out and be aggressive, either that whether it means take control right away or betting out or check raising. And I don't necessarily have to hit my spades or my ace or my queen or anything like that. But we'll see what the flop is. But I think I'm going to be pretty aggressive after the flop.
All right, well, I don't mind a call, but I really think a re-raise might be in order here, just because we are going to be out of position the rest of the hand, and to go back to what you said, let's say you did become aggressive and bet out rather than do the check raise, and then he raises us, and we really miss the flop. Now we've called and put out a bet that would have been probably more than our raise, so I'm thinking from middle position, this guy could have anything, and ace-queen suited is way ahead of his range. I'd like to take control of the hand now. And then do the continuation bet regardless, rather than calling and trying to be sneaky and make a donk bet and bet out a turn. So I'm thinking re-raise here and take control of the hand if he calls me. If he re-raises me again, I can get away from it, and that's plenty for me. But I would probably make it like 75,000 to go here.
All right, so committing 30 your chips pre-flop.
Yeah, I have no problem re-raising. Three times is 23,000 bet, so maybe 70,000.
Yeah, here's my thought process when I thought about raising, which I said I thought you know you could do with your chips, but if you make a bet like you said 70,000,
right?
That's a 30-year stack right now,
right?
Out of position with a hand that we don't like. And 150,000 in the pot. So now the flop comes, you got to keep the pressure on, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to bet another 75,000, 80,000.
I probably.
And now that's well more than half your stack that's in.
Yeah, I probably
maybe on a flop
would.
That's not great.
I probably would shove after the flop, no matter what. I'm just telling you how I'd probably play this hand.
All right, so you're gonna go to the mat, sight unseen, with ace of spades, queen of spades, out of position.
Yeah, in other words, I'm hoping that when I re-raise, he re-raises me. And if he doesn't, I'm going to defend my raise on the flop.
So why wouldn't you just go all in and pre-flop then? Which would be a crazy over bet, but you have a better shot at picking up some chips then.
Yeah.
Because if you get a flop, now all of a sudden he's seen three cards. Now, you know, if it hits his hand, he's going to call. If it's if he flops a good draw, he might say, you know what, I'm going to gamble. Pre-flop, though, if you're going to put that kind of pressure on him, unless he's got a really big hand.
Yeah. All right, well, maybe I raise to, like, 50,000 or so. That way it's, like, 1.5 times what he bet, and it might make him scared. And then if he calls, there's 100 in the pot, I can get away with betting, like, 30 or 40 on the flop.
Still pretty close to half your chips now. All right,
I got 220.
Right, but I mean, you put 50 in, and then you're talking another
170. You put 30. That's not even a fifth of my stack. If I had 170, and I bet 40.
All committed, it's 80,000. So that's a third of your stack. More than a third of your stack. Again, on a flop that you might not like, because you're already committing yourself in your mind to putting out another 30 grand on the flop, regardless of what it is, right?
Yeah. I just don't like calling him. I don't think shoving is the answer. That's 10 times as bad.
That's why Right Along with Columbo is awesome, isn't it?
Well, I don't like
I don't have an answer either. But
I don't mind it, but I just don't like a call.
Here's the thing. My initial thought was to raise.
Right.
And then I started thinking about how much I wanted to raise. And then I started doing the calculations that I just did there. And I'm like, you know what? This is what happens to me in tournaments. Is I decide calling is wussy. So I'm going to raise because that's what the big boys do. And then I'm going to put out a C bet because I got to keep control of the hand. And he calls me. And now I'm facing this on a turn with a board that I don't like. Half my chips are in the pot. And now I either got to push all in and hope that my hand is good or I give him the fold. Or wave the white flag and I just gave away half my stack for no reason. That's what kills me in tournaments.
Yeah.
And I think it might kill a lot of people.
You could fold.
But that's the other thing. Really, do you want to fold ace-queen here?
Yeah, I know.
This is a really good mystery this week, I think. I think with the 10%, you know, if you hit something good, then go to the mat. If not, you know, I kind of like the check raise out of the blinds because you can represent a whole lot of different hands.
Yeah.
Particularly if it's a smart 20,000 and you're only putting 10% of your stack in, that you're going to call with a lot of different hands there. I really do think a check raise on that flop, on any flop, is going to be pretty good. It's a more effective way of ending the hand right there.
Well, let me ask you, like I said in the beginning, I don't mind the call. I just felt like the re-raise, I feel like I had the best hand here. And I just because the guy's in middle position, he could have anything. And a re-raise will let me know right away if he has a better hand, and I can get away from it at that point, like you said.
Right. And very well could win the hand there. I'll give that to you.
So you're talking about, like, let's just say now we just call for 23,000. Now we're down to 190. And let's say we miss the flop. Now, we don't know what the flop is. Let's say we do miss it, but you want to go through with your plan of check raising. And now there's 50 grand in the pot, and he bets 3/4 of that or a little less. Say he bets, like, 35,000 or so.
Right.
You're going to check raise him. What would you check raise him to? 90? Because right there, that's 90. That's if you have 180, and that's not, or 180, 190, that's half your stack. You just check raise 50% of your stack anyway. So either way, you've gotten to the same point I have almost.
Yeah, but I think it's the sequencing that makes it different.
Well, again, I've taken control of the hand. You haven't. You've waited to check raise to take control of the hand.
Yeah, no, and normally I would like to take control of the hand. But the problem is when you're out of position is then you've got to maintain that control. If you're in position, you have the option of checking behind and getting a little tricky, keep the pot small.
Right.
But when you're out of position, you can't do that. If you check after raising, you got to hope then that the guy's going to just check behind and keep the pot. But he's going to say, wait a minute, this guy raised pre-flop or re-raised me pre-flop. And then the slop came, let's say he has an ace or a king or a somewhat scary card, and he checks. Now he's getting scared. Shouldn't I put a bet in and find out how scared he is?
Well,
I don't think there's any winning in this. I mean, this is rough.
Yeah, it I mean, obviously, I think that the right play is a re-raise just because I know I don't know, but I feel like I'm ahead here, and I want control of the hand. But I think a call is probably the more effective. I don't know. It's really hard to say.
I mean, maybe the best play is the call chicken move, which is normally what people would do. You know, rather than saying, hey, I'm going to be aggressive and check raise or take control of the hand on the flop, maybe I just, you know, put the 20,000 in. If I get a good flop, then boom, I'll go to war. And if not, then, you know, hey, it's 10% of my stack.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't want to do that a lot, obviously, because that's what bleeds your stack down. But.
Right. That is a good idea, though. Just the fact that you're just calling, you're only risking 10% of your stack. And if you miss the flop, you can move on. You have the button on, or I guess you're in the big blind. So
yeah,
you'd be in the small blind. Next sense, two hands later, you have the button, and you still have a ton of big blinds. You know, you got 40.
As long as you don't keep doing it, though. That's the other problem.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. Don't make it a habit.
It's like, hey, I'll take a shot. It's 10%. I'll take a shot. It's 10%. And you know, it's after 10 hands. Guess what? You're broke.
All right, let's call. Let's just call. I'm calling. And probably, I don't know, maybe if I'm in a tournament, I do just call. It depends on the player. That's the thing, though, is I don't know this player. You know what I mean? He just has a middle position player. It doesn't help me. But if I've been playing with this guy for a couple hours and I know he opens with crap, I'm going to probably just shove on him right there.
You know that he gets scared on flops that he misses. And, I mean, any multitude of information that you have can help make a better decision here.
Again, the boilerplate depends comes into play. But now I'm really curious, so let's hear what happens.
Welcome back. I decide I'm going to call, which is fine. If I was closer to the final table or the table was shorthanded, I would raise here. But I'm calling about 18K and have 200K behind and get to see a flop. So now the flop comes down. 10 of diamonds, 9 of spades, king of spades, and I just flop the nut flush draw. And a gut shot. I check and he bets 25K. Our move. Now what?
This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Oh, Chris, you remember 5.5 years ago we started this show?
You know, I don't remember what I had for breakfast, so I kind of remember when we started the show.
Let me refresh your memory. We did it right next to the office microwave.
Oh, that's right.
Where we had people walk in and, you know, heat up the lean pockets.
We had no idea what inflection meant. In our
Right, voice. And the show was 5 minutes. Well, we were technically beginners back then. Probably had a little bit of poker experience under our belt, but people who were learning with us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, 5.5 years later, we still suck. but at least we know what to do, even though we don't do it.
Yeah, we found more games and more creative ways to lose our money now. That's the only
difference. Exactly.
Yes.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yes.
But still, I mean, we have new people finding the show every day.
Yeah.
And going back and listening to the shows, and you know, every once in a while, it's nice to get a little kick in the rear end, and reminding us that not everybody knows all these crazy terms that we're throwing out, and or even some of the concepts that we're talking about. So this week, we're gonna do. We got this great letter from one of our beginner listeners. His name's Warren Ball. He's come to our Poker 101 courses. He sends us emails all the time asking for advice, but this time he actually saved up all the questions, Chris.
Which is cool.
Yeah, I put them all in one big email. And, you know, I looked at that and I'm like, you know what? Maybe this Thanksgiving weekend we should kind of do a beginner's refresher course. Now, this isn't, all right, you got a small blind and a big blind, that kind of stuff. I call it like maybe a step two, step three, maybe even step four. So concepts that aren't the beginning stuff, but they're stuff that we talk about often on the show and we maybe not explain it well enough. So, So for our beginners, if you're new to the game or relatively new, I think you're going to find a lot of good information here as we answer Warren's questions. And even if you're a veteran player, you might find out that you find some stuff that you either forgotten or it's a good refresher or something like that, right?
I couldn't agree more. I think that even if you know everything there is to know about poker, Scott and I are going to fumble this some way, and you're going to laugh your ass off anyway.
And you're going to feel superior to us.
And you're going to enjoy your little rants on the forum. So why not just tune in, listen, see how bad we ruin this. Warren, we're sorry if we screw it up. We're only doing our best, and we haven't had the luxury of eating any tryptophan yet. So to keep us relaxed. So you know we're just going to probably go crazy with this. But I have to agree, I think that this is important for some of the listeners. And for the ones who it's not, just sit back, relax, watch out for the oncoming traffic, and wait for the hand of the week.
All right, so Warren split his multitude of questions into two categories here, Chris.
Okay.
One is, the first is terminology, and he gave us 10 terms that he wanted us to define. Actually, we took one out because it didn't really make sense for the show, but so 9 terms. And then the second part is general knowledge, going back to my Quiz Bowl days. And he's got 4 little concepts that we've talked about on the show that he wants some more information on. So
cool.
Let's start with the terminology. Do you want to go first, or you want to throw me the lions first?
No, I'll go first. The first term he asks about is the word behind. And we're not talking about your cushiony derriere. We're talking about when you hear someone say call behind or check behind or even chips behind. He hears this a lot and in different references, so he's not exactly sure what we mean by behind. I can say that when someone calls behind, it means that someone's just making a call of the bet after you. They're behind you in order. In other words, they're like, if you're in seat 1, they're in seat 2, and you've made a bet in seat 1, and they've called behind. Am I right in saying that, Scott?
Not to be confused with call ahead, which you can't do.
Unless you want reservations, then you might.
This is one of the things that we kind of laugh about. The I just flat called.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of it's just an extra fanciful word that, to be honest, doesn't really mean anything.
Right.
And some people would argue it helps explain the situation a little bit better. But essentially, calling behind is just calling.
Yep. The same with check like, behind. Exact check same behind. Thing. Somebody behind right. you checked. In other words, the person next after you checked.
Chips behind is a completely different concept.
That's correct. A lot of times, it has to do with a player going broke and then saying, chips, please. And the runner will come over and say, this player is playing $100 or 100 chips behind. Mm-hmm. And because he doesn't have the chips physically there in front of him, but he has the money to back it up, it's kind of like Fort Knox and the gold reserves. He's going to the case to get you the 100 chips, but you are playing 100 chips behind because you don't have them. The other way that people refer to it is when they take loans out from players at the table, like you see on high-stakes poker a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, people won't know that Elia Lezra just gave Dan DeGranu 2 big bricks to keep playing, and so he's playing 100,000 behind. So in other words, if you have 200,000, he only has 100,000 in front of him, you can actually win 200,000 from him, because he's playing 100,000 behind, is what they say. So that's another way to think of it or look at it as well. So there you go.
Wow, very good. We're off to a good start.
All right, so far so good.
All right, the second term he wants to know is blocker bet. Yeah. And a blocker bet is kind of one of those bets that it's a smallish bet normally.
Right.
It's a bet when you figure that your opponent is probably going to bet, and it's probably going to bet more than you're comfortable and he or she betting. So if you put out a smallish bet, it might confuse them. Confuse might not be the right word, but they might say, you know what? All right, I'll just call. And you keep the pot smaller. Doesn't mean that they can't raise or they won't raise, but you're throwing it out there and hoping that you're trying to take control of the pot.
Right.
When somebody else is probably going
to
be driving it.
You're thinking that the other player might be looking to make a value bet on the river. So by putting a bet out there first before their turn to bet, you're keeping them from betting more because they may not be comfortable betting the amount that they would now need to bet to raise your bet. In other words, they might be comfortable betting $5 on the river, but because you've bet 3, they're not comfortable betting 9 or 10. And so this keeps them from betting 9 or 10 because obviously to raise, you have to raise at least the amount And usually people bet three times the amount of the bet when they want to race. So this is keeping them from making it $6 or 10 or 12 or whatever, because they're thinking, you know what, I really wanted to bet five there. He's already bet three. I'm happy with that. I'll call. So you're trying to block what their intentions are, right?
Sounds great to me.
All right, cool. The next one, cut off position. This is one of those made-up terms to describe the person who is right next to the button on the right. So
inside.
Yeah, and yeah. So you have, let's say the button is in seat five. The cutoff would be in seat four. And the reason why it's called the cutoff really is it's like it's the last person that can really take control of the hand before you start to think, yeah, this guy's just raising because there's blinds only behind him. So he's cutting off the action before it becomes almost automatic with the button and the two blinds behind him. That's kind of the reason why they call it that.
And the next term is the hijack position, which is one to the right of the cutoff position. So in a perfect world, you want to be on the button because you get the last act every time. If you can't be, then you want to be on the cutoff. And if you can't be there, then you would be in the hijack.
Yeah, and the hijack is pretty funny because you're just stealing the action from the cutoff person is why it's called that, right?
Yeah. And I think what's happened here is, you know, back in the old gentleman days of poker, right? And, you know, the button is where you want to be, and you could steal the blinds because, you know, you got a good position. And then everybody got aggressive, and they're like, you know what? Screw the dealer. I'm going to steal from the dealer. So then people started making those kind of same kind of raises you only used to make from the dealer spot in the now new cutoff spot. And then people got more aggressive. They're like, you know what? Forget that. That cutoff, he's stealing my chips. So I'm going to raise from the hijack spot. And really, that's as far as it's got. We've joked about the assassination spot, which is...
Yeah, we tried coining that about 4 years ago.
it never really caught on, and I think it's because essentially you're running out of spots. Yeah. And then you become under the gun. So
yeah, under the gun, and then assassination uses the gun. That's basically what it is. So.
Yep, there you go.
Another term he asked about was implied odds. Now,
yep, I'm gonna go get a sandwich. Yeah. You finish this.
Don't think that we're gonna go down that road again and try to explain pot odds. But what that means is these are the odds that you think you are going to get paid if you make your hand. In other words, the actual odds of a hand, let's say a pot is $100 and the bet is 10, you're getting 11 to 1 on your money. So those are the odds that you're getting to try to hit your hand. But implied means that you're implying that if I make my hand on the next street, he's going to bet again, and I'm going to win that money as well. So now I'm going to add that money into what's in the pot and what it's going to cost me, and then I'll figure out, okay, I'm going to make this amount of money rather than just the actual odds of money. So the implied odds are what I'm thinking I'm going to make from this player if I do indeed make my hand, rather than this is what I will make guaranteed, which is the actual pot odds. So implied is just assuming what you'll make if you make your hand on future streets.
Yeah, and generally for most people, it's kind of a justification for making a borderline call.
Yes, a loose call.
And I always like to tell people that I think it's a bad way of talking yourself into making a horrible call.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm not a real big fan of the implied odds, and the reason is that you're asking a lot of yourself at this point. You're asking yourself not only to figure out the situation here, figure out the pot odds, which you should be doing anyhow, but then knowing the player well enough to know, you know what, hey, if I make my flush, he's still going to bet.
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm going to get those chips, and, you know, that's one more piece of guesswork that I don't really need. I mean, now I'm not saying you shouldn't do it or it's not useful, but generally, when you hear people talk about implied odds, it's, well, you know, I had a flush, I didn't have the right odds, but I knew the implied odds were there, so I called.
Yeah,
and
you know,
call, and they bet, and the guy folds, and boom.
Yeah.
Guess what?
Yeah.
They didn't have the implied odds.
No.
They didn't exist.
You know, the consolation there is that you still won the pot. So, but the other thing too is a lot of times,
and generally you don't. Generally you don't hit.
And if you're talking about a flush as an example, a lot of times flushes won't get paid off anyway. Guys won't pay you when you make your flush because it's so obvious. The best hands that you have implied odds with are like hidden straights where you have a double belly buster and people can't really put you on 8-10 on that hand and you've made your straight. You know, those are the kind of hands where implied odds might actually come in your favor because they might actually get paid off. But most flushes don't get paid off as handsomely as you might imply. But that's kind of a roundabout way of explaining it, and that's the way whenever we get around odds, we do roundabout things.
Yeah, it's a very, very complicated concept, and therefore we suggest all beginners not worry about it.
Well, speaking of roundabout, the next term he called is orbit. He
wants to know can I have this one? This one's an easy one.
You can have orbit. Go ahead.
All right, orbit is just one round of playing around the table. So, you know, if we say the button's in the one seat, by the time the button gets back to the one seat, you've completed one orbit of play. And I guess the reason we talk about it is, you know, you're trying to figure M's and big blinds and that kind of stuff. And, you know, you're trying to figure how much that orbit's going to cost you.
Yeah.
If you're staying in, generally when you're short stacked, to know whether you need to be more aggressive in pushing or whether you've got some time to kind of wait it out.
Did you think I was going to step on your toes, buddy? I was going to let you take orbit. Don't worry. It was your turn. I wasn't stealing it from you. I was just introducing it. You go.
No, I want to jump all over it because I know you want to talk about squeeze play because you do this all the time.
Yeah, a squeeze play is, let's say, the under-the-gun player is kind of loose and he'll raise. And then you got a guy right next to him calling. And then it gets to you in position and you're like, you know what? I really don't think the guy who called had a big enough hand because if he had a good hand, he probably would have raised the under-the-gun player. And I don't really respect the under-the-gun player because he's opening a lot of pots. So I think if I re-raise here, I can squeeze the guy out because if I get the under-the-gun to fold, which is really probably the only person you need to worry about, you almost are positive that the guy who called in the middle position will probably fold as well because if he had a good enough hand to call your raise, he would have probably re-raised the other guy. So you're essentially squeezing them out of the hand. The other thing, too, is I think Barry Greenstein has said in the past that for it to be a real squeeze play, you have to have nothing. You have to literally have nothing in your hand, and it's just purely a squeeze play where you're just playing the situation and you don't actually have the cards to raise. You're just squeezing the situation. But can you improve upon that at all?
I thought that was beautiful.
Okay.
And you're right. I wouldn't get wrapped up in what Barry Greenstein says. I mean, really, what has that guy done? Just a pretender out there.
He's only got two bracelets.
But no, I mean, I don't think that you need to feel the need to have nothing to do the squeeze play. It's effective even when you have a hand. And a lot of times people are squeezing and they don't know they're squeezing, I think, right?
No, yeah. And the other thing, too, is I think Harrington actually sort of brought this into the poker lexicon with his books, his Harrington Hold'em books. I think that was where it was really put down in print because I don't think really other books have mentioned squeeze play until that moment and explain it to people and what it means. So that's what a squeeze play is. You're essentially not respecting the initial raiser and thinking the second raiser will probably, or second caller, I mean, will probably just fold because if he had a good enough hand, he would have raised himself. So,
and it's also good to kind of be able to recognize the squeeze play when it's going on.
Yeah.
Because if you're that guy in the middle, you might feel, hey, I'm being squeezed. I'm not going to take it laying down. And I'm going to repop them and find out whether it really is a squeeze play or not. So,
and if you have somebody behind you who likes to do it a lot, then you might want to just call, knowing he may squeeze when you have a big hand.
Exactly.
So, there's so many levels. It's kind of like Dante's Inferno.
But cooler.
But yeah, much cooler.
All right, the next one is a value bet, and we kind of briefly talked about this already. It's, hey, you've got the best hand, or you think you have the best hand, and it's on the river, or sometimes earlier, I guess, and you want to extract the maximum amount of money from your opponent, and if you bet too much, they're going to say, I'm going to fold, and that's not good, because you want to get some money out of them.
Right.
So you bet a smaller amount that is going to reel them in, entice them, hey, that looks tasty, I'll go ahead and I'll pay you off. And then you just add that to your little kitty that you want. So, again, it's one of the concepts where you're not trying to win pots. You're trying to win money.
Yeah, and you want to get full value. And that's the art of poker for a lot of these pros. They take forever on the end because they're trying to find the exact number for you to do exactly what they want you to do, whether it's fold or call. But
yeah, and the highest exact number.
Exactly.
You know, anybody could bet like $100 into a $1,000 pot and probably get called. But if you can get 250 out of them, then why not bet 250?
Yeah, exactly. So it's the value bet is you're trying to find the magic number that you'll get the maximum value. Now, the last term is kind of a play on two of our terms, the blocker bet and the value bet, and it's called the value blocker bet, something I've never heard of in my life, so I don't know if he's actually
I think it was on the Hardee's dollar menu now.
I guess we're going to have to surmise, because I didn't actually type in value blocker bet into Google and try to find other people talking about this, because I'd never heard of it, but...
Well,
really?
And Warren said, hey, this is stuff you heard on our show. So now I'm really intrigued as to what show the term value blocker bet appeared on.
Well, he also said that he's been playing a lot on Poker Stars. Maybe he saw it on the chat. Somebody was saying, that was a value blocker bet you made.
I don't know.
But to me, I guess a value blocker bet is sort of a bet where you're making a bet that looks like you're trying to make a bet for value, but really what you're doing is trying to keep them from betting more. So you have to find a number that looks like a value, but is also high enough to keep them from raising you. So maybe that's what a value blocker bet would be. I really don't know.
Well, and I guess, I guess you'd have to be out of position too. Because if you're in position, then it really is a value bet at that point.
Yeah.
Because you're not trying to block anything at that point.
Right.
So maybe it's
out of position. You're right.
I guess when people are tired of talking about it, maybe it's a value bet when you're out of position. And because it looks like a blocker bet because it's small enough. That's where it came from, but
yeah. But I mean, you can still make a value bet and be out of position. You can still have to know it's out of position.
Right. So. But I guess what I'm saying is people are looking for fanciful words to describe things.
Yeah.
It's like the whole calling behind instead of calling. Flat calling. Oh, that wasn't just a value bet. That was a value blocker bet. Oh, okay.
I'm hoping one of these terms actually makes it into the Oxford Dictionary, like that Sarah Palin word that wasn't really a word. I don't know how they actually agreed to put it in there, but whatever, word of the year. But I'm hoping value blocker bet's there.
I guess, Chris. And maybe another way is, you know, a value bet, it was pretty sure you've got Broadway, it's the nuts. You know you got the best hand, you're just trying to extract value. Maybe a value blocker bet could be when it's a little less likely or certainly less guaranteed that you have the best hand. You feel pretty confident that the hand you have is the best, but not too confident, and you think somebody else has a pretty decent hand, but not as good as a hand as you. So by putting that first bet out, they're going to go, you know what? I was going to value bet, but since you bet, I'm just going to call.
Yeah. That's
no.
Yeah. That's kind of like a blocker bet, though.
Think it too hard there?
Yeah. I think we've covered it. With everything we've said, we're sort of like all the monkeys in one room writing Hamlet. You know, I mean, I think that's what we just did. We pretty much, with everything we said, we've pretty much given the answer somewhere in there. All Warren has to do is decipher it. But pretty much I've never said that term. Scott's never heard of that term either, so I don't know where he heard it. It's got to be Poker Stars. But now we get to the general knowledge, which is your exciting thing. So why don't you take the first question?
All right, here we go. Why is it an advantage to go all in on the button? He says, I understand betting last is a big advantage, but if one bets all in, he is done until the end of the hand. He can no longer bet last or even bet at all. How can he possibly benefit from being the dealer at that point, Chris?
I was letting you take it because I don't think you can. I've never heard of somebody saying
yeah,
all in on the button
said
is good.
The same thing. I really don't see any extra advantage to going in on the button. Obviously, if you're going all in, you're doing it for other reasons. Your position doesn't matter. So I think this might have been a something maybe we just didn't understand correctly in hearing things, but... But no, I mean, you're right. I mean, the reason you like to be on a button and betting is that you control the action at that point.
Well, the only thing that I can think of is, you know, let's say you're in a sit-and-go. And if you've read these guys' sit-and-go strategies, these online geniuses, you know, a lot of their stuff is if you're on the button, you're automatically shoving at a certain point in the because all you have are the blinds behind you. So there is an advantage to going all in on the button when no one else has come into the hand and all you have are the blinds behind you because you're putting them to a test. They have to have a hand, and giving the math and the odds, those four cards won't amount to anything better than queen seven at any time. So the advantage
I'll give you
is going
that.
On. That's the only thing I could think of to try to answer that question for him. But generally it means that I think that, you know, the advantage is just being on the button, not going all in on the button.
Yeah, I'll give you that, but I think you can also accomplish the same thing by just a larger than a 3x bet that doesn't commit your whole stack in case you run into aces or kings or something.
Yeah, no, but
I don't know
that
that sounds.
That doesn't come into there too. I mean, if you ever read any of it, you'll see that they don't even care what their cards are and they don't care the amount. They're just shoving because that's the play to make. and it doesn't even matter. I think we've had some other.
Yeah, all right, but I'm interested, though. I mean, if you're going to get the same response from a 5X raise that you are from a 11X all in, why would you ever commit your 11X?
Well, it might not be that. It might be that, you know, your total amount is a 5X raise. You know what I mean? But
well, yeah, but that's why it's a different situation. But, right. I mean, I guess the point we're putting out there is that you want to bet the maximum amount or the minimum amount that's going to derive the action that you want. And if you want the blinds to fold, it might not necessarily be an all-in, even though an all-in would work in that case.
Well, again, I these guys are making millions of dollars doing it, and you and I are doing a show. So I've read them to say that. I've read where they've said that, where they just shove no matter what because that's what the action calls for, regardless of your stack, their stacks, whatever. And I think even Jay Houston's written something like that about sit and goes in our magazine too. But I read so many things that I forget more stuff than I remember. So, but really, I don't think
Loba.
If we're talking about just in general, in a cash game or in tournaments, there is no advantage to going all in on the button because you're only going to get called by a better hand and you're done with your action. So it seems to me that it might be just a combination of things that he's heard that have confused him maybe. But that's just how I feel.
We're in agreement.
Yeah. All right, number two. Lee Childs has said that a two-thirds pot bet prices out draws. Was he referring to the specific hand that we were discussing at the time, or was he speaking in general? He asks this because in a recent issue of our magazine, Lee had written that he often opens preflop and follows with a continuation bet of two-thirds the pot. Yeah. I think when you bet two-thirds the size of the pot, that's generally a good rule of thumb because if you have a flush draw, you need better than that to get the right price to call. So, yeah, I think that is a general rule that's why he bets that much, and that's why regardless of it being a continuation bet, it could be an actual bet that you've hit. Because a lot of people think of continuation as bet as, you know, you've missed the flop, but you're betting because you raised preflop. And it could also mean that you've hit the flop and you have a good hand and you're betting. So it doesn't necessarily mean that he's betting two-thirds because he has nothing. He could also have something as well there. But I would think that it does price out draws, and that's why he bets that amount, no matter what.
Yeah, and I think when you talk to some of the pro players, they all seem to have they're all in agreement that you want to be consistent with your bet to kind of disguise your hand.
Yeah.
But if you're consistent, you need it to be big enough to get those draws out. And Lee has determined that two-thirds works for him. I know I've seen interviews with Greg Raymer that he generally likes to bet the pot.
Yep.
That's what works for him.
Yep.
And there might be some people that bet a little less than that. But if you get too much less than that, then you're letting those draws get in. So.
And there has to be a draw, too, for you to even worry about it. You know, that's what
that is very true.
Right?
It's very true.
Could come queen, deuce, seven, rainbow, and there's no possible draw out there. So you don't have to worry about it. But generally, yeah, if there is a draw out there and you're thinking he may have a draw because of the way the hand played out before the flop and the action leading up to it or whatever, then you may want to bet at least two-thirds of the pot because if you bet less, you're giving them the odds to call with like a flush draw.
All right, the next one. Where can I find a ranking of all the starting two-card hands in Texas Hold'em? He says Phil Hemmy lists his top 10, and so does Mike Caro. But I'm looking for all the rankings. He doesn't care about the top 10, Chris.
Okay.
He wants to play every hand from ace-ace to seven-deuce off. And he says, in addition, I'd like to see the statistical win rate of each starting hand.
Okay.
Where can you help him out here?
Well, the funny thing is that I'm assuming that, you know, because he's emailed us and he listens to our show, that he has the internet. So, you know, you type in what you want into Google, you're going to find it. I know. I literally saw this question 5 minutes before the show started. I typed in ranking hands Texas Hold'em. That's all I wrote. And literally, there are hundreds of sites that had this information. One was called tightpoker.com, T-I-G-H-T, poker.com. And that listed, like, all of the hands, starting ranks, what their winning value is. Like, not necessarily a percentage, but what their winning value is based on how many hands dealt, all this other stuff. And then there was another site called gocee.com. It was G-O-C-E-E.com. And then to find a specific page was /poker/HE_val_sort. sort.htm as in Michael. So I'll probably put a link on our recap for that. But really, you don't need these two sites. I'm just giving you an example. These sites have, you type that stuff into Google and you're going to find tons of sites that have every single hand from ace-ace to deuce-seven off. And and tell you what their value is, what percentages, how often you'll get dealt, and whatever, what they do against other hands, how many players against each hand. Because, like, one of the charts has, you know, if you're heads up, ace-ace is like an 80% favorite against any hand. And then two-handed, it drops down to like 70 and or whatever it is. And then as you exponentially go out, it gets worse and worse. So those charts are all out there for you to find. Just type the words into Google and you'll find anything you want, really.
And I think maybe perhaps Warren was worried about getting somebody that doesn't know what they're talking about, putting the site out, which is part of the reason. That's why you mentioned Phil and Mike. But here's the thing. This is math.
Yeah.
All right. This doesn't have anything to do with feeling or experience or anything. This is just pure, unadulterated math. So, you know, if you find the list, assuming the guy knows how to run a spreadsheet or a statistical program, the information should be the same everywhere you go. Yeah. Now, what he's probably talking about with Phil and Mike is that maybe they have top 10 hands that they like or that they think are more powerful or something like that, but that aren't quite based on the true hard statistics. And if that's the case, I mean, you're better off just Googling your favorite player who matches your playing style and go by whatever he or she says.
Helmuth is famous for his top 10 hands, and everybody makes fun of him when they're playing cash games. You watch it on TV, guys always joke around with him. And in his book, that Play Poker Like the Pros, he says, if you don't have one of these hands, don't play. And which, you know, that means you'll end up pretty much not playing a hand for an hour or two at a time.
Then you'll be taking all your chips.
Exactly. But those are his top 10 hands for what that he would play or how he plays them. But as far as percentage of what they would win and stuff, just type it into Google. You'll find what you want.
All right. And then his final one, Chris, I think is very similar. He wants to get starting hand odds against an opponent. He said, for example, it's 220 to 1 against having a pocket pair. And if one does, and what are the odds of a number or whatever number of opponents also having a pocket pair or hitting a pair on the flop? And he goes on to say, you know, the odds, they change depending on how many people are in the hand. And he sees on TV, sees the odds are given to one guy winning. But then, you know, there's two people in, the odds change. So he's trying to find some help on where all this stuff is.
Yeah, pretty much the exact same thing. I know, you know, some of those things were given already, like the against an opponent and against two opponents and against three opponents. At least one of those websites had that. But here's a good thing. Raise enough to get heads up. Then you don't have to worry about what it is against multiple opponents.
That's very true.
And you're going to miss two out of every three flops to flop a pair. So what's it? A little less than 33% that you're going to flop a pair if you had two unpaired cards in your hand. And flopping a set is like 8-1 or whatever. So, you know, those are pretty quick things that you usually hear, you know, at the water cooler. But some of the other stuff that he's looking for, you might have to search pretty hard for that, but those are things that we just don't have in the NEUP archives to, like, pull out numbers for you now.
Well, he did ask about the Poker Whiz Wheel, and we used to give those away on the show, and you can still buy them fairly cheaply at, I believe it's thepokerdepot.com. That kind of had some of that information in a little wheel form, so that might be a good place to go. And then on our website, we have, you know, our Poker News odds calculator, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's on the right-hand side. Just click on that, and you can put in all kinds of card combinations against a number of players and see that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, it's really cool. It tells you exactly where you stand against those types of hands. But the problem is you need to know what hands they have. You know, and when you're playing live, people aren't going to tell you, hey, I got ace-king. Yep. What do you think you're doing against mine? You know, you're never going to know. So you have to find a range for them, put them on those particular types of hands, then find out if you're, you know, I mean, it's so, there's so much more leading up to that that you need to learn before you even have to really worry about your percentage against three other players when you're holding 7-8. You know, it's not an easy game to play. People think it's easy, but it's really not.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the best way to start with that is just to put in heads up stuff, like you said, like put in pocket aces and just put in a couple of random types of hands, you know.
Yeah.
Suited connector, you know, two Broadway cards, you know, smaller pair, that kind of stuff, and see it, and then, you know, go from there and add in a third element, maybe aces against those two, so you can kind of get an idea of the range. It's not going to be perfect, but at least you're going to get the idea of how certain card combinations change the odds.
And just so we don't spark another email from Warren, suited connectors are two cards that are consecutive in rank and the same suit. So 78
spades.
Buddy.
78 Very spades. Good.
Thank you. 78 spades.
78 of spoods?
Spoods. Those are, you never heard of spoods? They started in Ireland. That was they called them spoods. But you know, those are suited connectors. So, but anyway, I'm glad we did this little revisit. If anything, I learned what a value blocker bet is.
Or at least we learned what we made it up to be.
Oh, man. And, you know, if you like poker terms, I wrote a story about poker terms that we might put in our January issue, so be on the lookout for that. Might be kind of fun. It's more of a fun look at some of the vernacular that floats around out there. But let's move on to our hand of the week.
This is Noah Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
I always love when we have a unique hand, Chris.
Okay.
You know, most of the time people are sending in us their poker star hands or home game hands, and they're great. You know, not knocking them at all, but every once in a while we get a hand that's a little different and adds a little wrinkle to our otherwise benign. I would have folded preflop, but since we didn't, this is how we do it.
Okay.
Hand, right?
Yeah.
All right, and it comes from a cool name, Malcolm O'Malley from Boston.
Malcolm O'Malley. Wow.
I'd love to see the lineage on that family.
I wonder if people Malcolm call him, O'Malley. Like, Mal-O-Mal. That'd be a cool nickname. Hey, Mal-O-Mal.
Awesome. It also sounds like a candy bar. Hey, yeah, Mal-O-Mar. I'll get Reese's Cups and a Mal-O-Mal.
Well, that's a cool All right, name.
But he's from Boston. And, you know, Chris, here's the thing. He says that he does not like playing poker online. Just doesn't like it. All right? He says there's too many coolers, too many bad beats, too much aggravation. And he much rather prefers the game live. All right?
Okay.
Malcolm, I'm with you, buddy. Give me a little of the brother's power hit virtually here. But, you know, obviously, if you don't play online, you're giving up some advantage. I mean, the convenience factor, all kinds of other things. So there's a reason to play both. So, but he was happy that he recently found a Texas Hold'em computer simulation that is modeled after the World Series of Poker main event.
It sounds a lot like the game I played with Big Dave out in Vegas.
You know what? And I wrote Malcolm back, and I'm like, you know what? I think that's the same one that I have and the same one that Chris talked about on the PokerCast, and if so, it is really cool.
That would be pretty wild if that's what that was.
And he said he thinks the program seems to be statistically sound, and even though it's all fake money, playing against computer people rather than actual opponents, he's found that it's really sharp in his game. And also, it's fun just kind of push in huge bets and not have to worry about it. All right, so here's what he did. The hand that he sent in, Chris, came in what the program calls the 05 World Championship. And the tournament started with 5,619 players at the 5,100 level. Each level is 2 hours long, and every player started with a starting check of 30,000. So it sounds very similar to a tournament held every July. But he says because the shuffling's automatic and the computer decisions are real quick, the actual two-hour level actually takes about 20 to 25 minutes.
Okay.
So
okay.
He's not committing 3 weeks
okay.
of time to do this.
Right.
Deep in the tournament, there's only 27 players left, so he's on the ESPN tables now. Spread over three tables. Level 24, the blinds are now 20,000, 40,000. It's a 5,000 ante.
Oh, my God.
See, this is fun already, because we talk about how cool it is to talk about the nickel-dime games, because that's what our listeners play. And now we get the chance to actually talk about a big hand without it actually really being a big hand.
All right, so I'm literally playing against a computer here. Is that what you're telling me?
We are playing against computer-generated people, yes.
Oh, my God, I feel like Garry Kasparov.
Wow. Bring out the chess, Robert.
Bring out the big blue
big
diamond,
blue.
Whatever they call it. All right, so let's see. We're 20, 40, 5K, and what's our stack?
All right, we are at second place in the tournament with just a hair over 25 million in chips.
Oh my God! Okay,
see,
I would say
fun.
we have at least 10 big blinds. I'm gonna say.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
And he says the chip leader's not at his table, so you know we are the king at this particular kingdom.
Okay.
Everyone ante's up. We like it. Blinds are posted, and folds around to him in the cutoff seat, Chris. And the cutoff, again, is the player right of the button, right?
That's the person right next to the button, but not in the blinds.
We look down at Queen of Spades, Nine of Diamonds. There's 105K in the pot, just a button and blinds behind us. What do we do?
It's interesting. I'm wondering, do we know what the other stacks are at the table by any chance? Is that possible?
It may later on in the hand. I'll let you know if that information is made known to us.
All right.
But we know we're second. We're the chip leader at the table. So.
I mean, if I'm like a massive leader at this table, I'm just going to raise every hand no matter what I have. So
put a lot of pressure on people.
Yeah, I mean, if I have 25 million, like the closest guy to me has like 7 million, I mean, I'm raising every hand. So that's the thing is, I don't know.
And particularly the hand that's statistically better than average, right?
Yeah, and statistically it's better than Queen 7, which is the average hand that wins. So, I mean, if I'm going to play the hand and I'm the first in, I'm going to raise with it. I'm not just going to limp. If I'm going to play it. So this is going to be fun. I'm going to make it 140,000 to go.
140,000. Have you ever made a bit that big?
No, I don't think I have, unless I was online, maybe. But other than that, yeah, 140 grand to go, just because I can bully everybody with 25 million and no one can bust me.
All right, so it's essentially 3X plus a little sweetener there to count for the Annies, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I totally agree with you.
Thank you.
We'll see what the computer controls. Well, our hero decides to raise to 200,000.
That's a lot. That's 5X. I mean, that's not a bad thing. I mean, you got 225 million. I mean, so that's, you got over 200 of those types of bets in you. So, or whatever, so 100, whatever. So, 100 bets. No, 100. Yeah, 100 bets. So that's fine. Whatever. But I would never bet that much.
Yeah, the actual raise amount probably, you're right, depends on the chip stacks that we're playing against. You know, you want, again, as we said, we really don't want to see a flop here. We're just happy with the blinds and annies. So whatever you think is the minimum amount of money that you could bet to achieve that would be what you want to shoot out for,
yeah.
I would think, right?
Yeah.
So you and I agree, 140, 150,000.
Yep.
He thinks it's going to take a little bit more. He's playing, we're not. We're just here.
Hey, he's the one second in chips. You're the one and I doing the hand. So
right.
He knows better than we do.
All right, so there is 200,000. The button calls, the blinds fold, and so we're heads up against the button, which, as he says, great. The only position that I did not want to call, which he is correct.
That is correct.
505,000 in the pot, and the flop comes 5 of spades, 7 of clubs, jack of hearts. Really not a lot of anything for us other than we have one over card. And I guess gut shot, right?
We need gut shot. Runner, we need.
Backdoor gut shot.
Backdoor runner.
Which, Warren, if you're listening, that means translates to crappy hand.
Yeah, we don't have...
Backdoor gut shot equals crappy hand.
Yeah, we don't have anything here.
The only thing we do have is that we took aggression pre-flop.
Right. Well, I mean, you got 25 million. I got... At this point, I have no problem betting like 375 or so into this pot.
That's about two-thirds of the pot. Yeah. Did you learn that on a podcast?
I learned that somewhere. I can't remember where. Not that there's really a draw out there. I mean, yeah, straight draws are there at some point. I just don't think someone called a raise with like 6-8, you know, or maybe 9-10, but they're not going to call that much with a gut shot, so two-thirds would take it down probably. So I'll bet two-thirds and see what happens. But once I get called, if I don't improve dramatically on the turn, I'm done with the hand.
Yeah, and the fact that there are really no real draws out there, I mean, this is a hand where you know you can bet and the fit or fold kind of thing. Most likely your opponent missed this and you're going to take it down because you were the pre-flop aggressor, which is why you're the pre-flop aggressor.
Yep, yep. That's why you did in the first place. So let's see what happens. We're going to bet. What's he going to do?
All right, so our hero says he hates acting out of position and he's ready to give up on his hand, barring some sort of miracle, so he checks.
Well, I don't totally disagree with checking, especially if I know the player behind me. I realize I took control of the hand, and we kind of saw what kind of trouble you can get into with the ride-along by just betting just to bet. You know, so I don't know. I mean, I typically, because I took – when I play poker, I play kind of confidently when I play. So if I emitted this sort of confidence when I made my raise – I'm going to have to follow it up with a bet. So I really don't like the check here. I don't like playing the hand at all, to be honest with you. I probably would have just folded the queen nine anyway, pre-flop. But since we did play it, I would play it for a raise. And since I have played it for a raise, I'm probably going to continuation bet here and bet like 350, 375 or whatever. So I don't like the check given that we raised pre-flop.
Well, I don't like it because of our chips.
And then our chips, yeah.
25 million. Our pre-flop raise was 200. We still got 25 million in chips.
I know.
It's 500,000 in the pot. Come on. If you're not going to swing the trunk around a little bit with this kind of hand and this situation, then, you know, don't swing it at all.
Exactly.
And just sit back and wait for the aces and wait and, you know, hope that people don't catch up to your 25 million. I mean, really, 500,000, even if you make a pot-sized bet, that's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah,
And like I said, I mean, you got a pretty good shot of taking it down, you know, unless the guy wants to get frisky with the number two or the chip leader to the table, which generally people don't want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think, I mean, if this guy behind us had like 21 million or something, I might want to not tangle with him, and I probably wouldn't have raised reflop, but I don't know what he has either, so it's hard.
Well, I'm glad you asked, Triss, because that information has just come to light.
Okay, and what's this guy at?
Our opponent started the hand with 14,720,000.
Yeah. Yeah, so he could hurt us.
About 14.5 million at this point.
Yeah, he could hurt us.
He could. Absolutely could.
Yeah. I don't know. I probably would have folded this preflop. It's not a nice hand. I mean, it's cool to just rob people, but if you got a guy who's got 50% of your stack behind you, you know, and he's got position on you, why do you want to get involved? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so, no, that's a very good point. But at this point, you know, we got in. I don't want to compound the mistake with another mistake, but I don't think it's a mistake to bet here.
No, I don't either.
The guy takes a shot at us, then fine. You know, give it up. I mean, great. You know, take my whatever it is, 700,000 or 400,000 that, you know, I still got 24 million in change.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing, too, is if you bet the amount that we bet, you know, we made it like 140 originally. It'd be 280 in the pot. You can get away with betting like, you know, even 170 at that point. You've only risked less than 400. You know what I mean? At that point with a follow continuation bet. So that's the problem with making it 200, because now it's like 400 or 500 in the pot. Now to make a real, you got to make almost 300 to 400,000 to make a real bet. Now you've committed almost 600,000. You know what I mean? So it just compounds itself.
Money adds itself up. Yep, yeah. Absolutely. And the guy was going to call if we bet 140,000.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's going to raise, he would have raised 200,000. So.
Yeah, yeah. So I like a bet here. I don't like a checking out, but the way it's played out.
Okay. Our opponent checks behind, though. So we get a free look at the turn.
All right.
And the turn is the 10 of spades. So our board now is the 5 of spades, 7 of clubs, jack of hearts, 10 of spades. So now we've got a flush draw on board. And the straight is 8, 9. Yep.
9, yeah. All right, well, here's the problem with this. Sure, we're open-ended, but someone else got there, and if we had bet, we probably would have taken it down already. Now we've let this guy either catch up or make, you know, a pair that we can't, you know, that we can beat with our queen maybe, but not the 9 if we hit the 9. So, I mean, I'm just not happy with it now. I would have rather have just bet and seen what happened. Now that we've both checked, this guy could have gotten wherever he wanted to get. Because don't forget, if he had 8-9, you know, he had to hit a gut shot. You let him hit a gut shot for free, you know. So I'm not saying he has 8-9, because not that many people will call with 8-9, especially when you're a computer. But you never know what the computer's going to show turn over. You know what I mean? You never know. So I'm not happy with the check. And now, even though I've got the bet, you know, I've got the draw for the bet, I don't think I'm going to bet now.
You're not going to bet now.
I don't know. I mean,
I agree. I wish we had been more aggressive at some point here, but I really can't put this guy on 8-9. I can't put him on pocket 10s, so I don't see how this card really hurts anything. At this point, I'm going to kind of man up here and put a bet in and maybe you know, put some pressure on him. I'm not going to – I mean, what if he has 2 spades now?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to give him a second free card and let him go runner to take me down. Man, I would just, like – jump off a building if that happened.
All right, so you're saying bet like 350 like we were going to do on the flop.
Yeah, I would bet what I would have bet on the flop, yeah. And, you know, I mean, what's the worst that you got to do? He's going to raise you, which, you know, which we talked about on the flop. We would have folded. So, yeah, hey, we'll fold it. And if he folds, then great. We just won the pot.
Yeah, see, I can't the money I put out there already. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking.
But now that we're open-ended, it's kind of tough. I mean, I don't think we'll fold either, but But I think I got to put something on here. And then get this. So if you put it in and he calls and you hit your straight, now you look like a genius.
Yeah, he'll never put you on that hand after that. Well, here's the thing is when I'm doing these hands, I'm thinking about how I would have played it and how much money's out there. But actually, it's how he played it and how much is out there. So there's still only 500 out there. So, yeah, I probably would put out like a $300,000 bet there just because that's how much I would have put on the flop. Right. You know, me, I'm thinking that there's 300 more out there, and then he calls, so there's 600 more out there, and now I've got to make a bigger bet, but I really don't because it's the way he played it. So, yeah, I probably would bet like 350 here.
Okay, our hero says his analysis of the opponent. See, we get a little, we peel back a layer of the onion every card here, Chris. And now we find out that our opponent is tight and fairly aggressive after watching him for several hands. And so we're putting him on a big ace, maybe 9-9 or 8-8. And he doesn't think that he would have tried to trap us with a flop set by checking, because I've seen him bet his sets on previous hands. And so we figure we can fire off a bet here and take this pot down. So he puts $350,000 into the pot.
I just want to say one thing. Let me get this straight. We are still talking about a computer, right?
Yes. But, you know, these computers all have algorithms that are matched to play a particular style. So just because they're computers doesn't mean that that there's not betting patterns.
I agree with that bet. I agree with that bet. Given the way he's played it, I agree with that bet to see what this guy's got.
All right, and he is surprised that his opponent calls, bringing the pot now to $1.2
million. Huh. Well, it feels like a jack. It feels like a jack, like an ace jack, or maybe an ace 10. That's what it kind of feels like.
Ace 10.
He checked
ace jack,
behind
I that. Think there might be a bet.
Yeah, there might have been a bet. So ace 10, it feels like a 10. It feels like ace 10. Because he checked it because he didn't hit it. Now that he's hit it, he's not sure where he is, so he can't raise. So he's just calling. That's what it feels like. It feels like something like that, like queen 10, king 10.
I really like the ace 10, unless maybe it's a flush draw as well, too.
Yeah, now, yeah, it could have been.
Betting 350, I mean, it's not great pot odds for a flush, but, you know.
Yeah, could have been any two spades.
Flush and straight draw, maybe, I mean, you know.
And we do have a straight draw, I mean, we're hoping it's not a spade.
Right. All right, so our hero narrows his opponent's hands down. He says there's no way he called that bet with 9-9 or 8-8. Pretty sure he's not full playing a set, so he's certain it's not 8-9. So maybe he's getting crazy with ace-queen. But the only two hands that he thinks makes perfect sense are ace of spades, jack of spades, or ace of spades, king of spades. And I'm going to have to go ahead here and disagree with him.
Me too, especially ace, jack of spades. He'd have bet that on the flop. He definitely won the check behind with top pair like that top kicker. And especially when he said he was aggressive. If this player has been playing aggressively in this computer simulation, then there's no way he checks. First of all, he might even re-raise pre-flop with ace-jack suited and ace-king suited.
Definitely, I think he's re-raising with ace-king suited.
Yeah, and if he didn't, then when he hits that jack on that flop, there's no way he's letting it go check-check. Yeah. So I don't put him on that hand. If that's the hand, then he didn't assess this player the way he actually plays. So if going on the information he gave us, there's no way he has those two hands.
Yep.
And they don't make sense at all.
All right, well, the river is the king of spades. So our final board is the five of spades, seven of clubs, jack of hearts, ten of spades, king of spades. So obviously we make the king high straight, not the nut straight. And also the spades get there, though.
Right.
And our hero has the gut feeling that something just isn't sitting right.
So we make a value blocker bet.
Value blocker bet. See? This is perfect. How much did you even set that up that way? But that's exactly what you do here, right?
It's like $1.2 million in the pot, right?
We got a good hand. It's obviously not the nuts. We think our opponent probably has something, too. So we're just going to keep the pot small here and hope he just calls, and we'll get lucky and win this thing, right?
Yeah, we'll bet like a value blocker bet here for, was it $1.2
million
you said?
$1.2 million. So,
yeah, I would say around $400,000 to $480,000. Somewhere in between there is like a value blocker bet here. A little more than a third of the pot.
Excellent, excellent. All right, well, our hero says he can't just check here. He has to bet to find out where he is. You're not really betting to find out where you are on the river.
Right.
You're betting for value here. So maybe his read is wrong, and he'll just fold right out. So he decides the pros of betting outweigh the cons, bets the pot of $1.2
million. Wow.
Bringing the pot to $2.4 million, and the opponent raises to $3.155 million, ballooning the pot to $5,565,000, and I'm going to pause to catch my breath here.
Wow. Wow. I wonder if they use placards.
That would be awesome.
All right. So that's
just $1 chips would be great. Can you imagine your screen?
That's a lot, man. And like I said, this guy's the one that could damage us. So
Let's think back to our value blocker bet here. If we had bet $400,000, I think we could get away with this pretty easily, right?
Yep.
And not to say that this is a tough call here, man, but we put an extra $800,000 in this pot that we didn't need to.
Yep, I agree. I think that
and that's starting to become significant now.
Good lord.
Because remember, if this guy wins this pot,
You're essentially almost tied with them now.
20 million, and well, 20, yeah, we're gonna be tied pretty close.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah. I see. I would have bet 400,000 and gotten away from it if he raised me. And if I now calling with just a straight when one other hand beats us, ace queen, and any flush, baby flush, any flush beats us, you know, ace queen of spades makes sense. Doesn't ace queen of spades make sense here?
It does now. Yeah.
I mean, ace queen of spades. They both got to check the flop. He picked up the straight and the flush draw on the turn, and then on the river made his nuts. So,
yep.
I'm gonna fold.
And the raise was probably a little bit more than I would have done if I had that nut hand. But again, that kind of makes you feel like that he doesn't want to call.
The only thing that gets me is that he's aggressive. So I. You know, he could have the same straight as us.
Well, here's the thing, too, is when the straights or when the draws get there and you're in position and now somebody bets out something weak, I mean, there's a lot of value to raising there.
Yeah.
Letting them know, hey, I hit that straight. I hit my draw got there bigger than yours. And I want to take it down even if you don't have it. And it makes you go through these things that we just thought about. Maybe he's got ace queen. Maybe he's got spades. Maybe he's got a lot of these hands.
That's the thing is, I don't think any hand worse than ace, queen of spades can really, really put in a big raise there. So if I can't imagine somebody with like 8, 9 of spades, which doesn't really make sense in this hand anyway, but like something like that, putting in a bigger raise. So I feel like it has to be the nut flush to do that, right?
See, I might disagree. I might disagree that that he's not putting us on a draw, and there's nothing to suggest the way we've played it that we were on a draw, that we very well could have, ace-king or king-ten or something like that. And now by raising in a significant amount, which it's about a little less than 3x the raise of the bet, we put our opponent to the test regardless of whether we have anything or not.
Well, the only thing is that this guy started with 14 million. He's betting about a third of his stack on a bluff or.
But I think that also shows something. If you're paying attention to your opponent's stack, you're like, man, he's putting that much of his stack in. He's not doing it on a whim because he knows I get the money to call. I mean, I think there's some reverse psychology going on here that's pretty effective.
Well, the other thing is that you're playing like a human and I'm playing this against a computer.
That's true.
I'm pretty sure a computer's not on that level. I don't think a computer's bluffing.
No, I mean, you can program that algorithm however you want. You can make it a very smart. Now, of course, this game is probably 6 years old.
Yeah, and I don't think you programmed it. I think he bought it that way. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I just feel like any computer program that would make that raise bluffing would have bet that flop, would not have checked, regardless
but
of what
again, he's playing the computer simulation to learn how to play in the real world.
Right.
So, regardless of whether the computer would make it or not, I mean, you're using this to kind of... I mean, I would think the value of playing this simulation is to actually put yourself at the Rio.
Yeah.
And thinking about what you would do in that situation, which is something that none of us could ever imagine being 27 players left and second in chips at the World Series of Poker, right?
Yeah.
So here, I mean, if we're doing it and wasting our time, we're not trying to win the world online, whatever this thing is called, and getting the little virtual trophy. You know, we're using it to actually learn a real-life lesson here. So I'm dismissing the fact that I'm playing against a computer. I'm trying to think if this guy was a real player, what would he be doing here?
Well, I just feel like any hint worse than that, it's tough to make that raise. I mean, if you're a really good bluffer, you can maybe try that. But you're also got to remember that this computer program is playing against basically the chip leader of the tournament. Who can afford to make this call and not even worry about it. Really, if he makes this call, he still has 20 million.
Yeah.
So you're not hurting the chip leader. You're just – and considering that he is – I mean, essentially, he's a chip leader in the tournament because at your table, that's all that you can deal with is what's at your table.
Exactly.
So I can't imagine this guy bluffing that much of his stack off, regardless of being a computer or not, against a guy who can easily just snap call because he's already bet – remember, he didn't bet our 400,000. He bet 1.2 million. And then he got raised. So to me, if you're going to bet 1.2 million, you're probably going to be able to call 4 or 5 million if you have 25 million in front of you. So I don't think that bluff, I don't think it's a bluff. I really don't. I feel like it's got to be ace, queen of spades or ace something of spades. And like he could have ace, nine of spades, you know, and got the check right behind. He could have any suited ace of spades, got the check behind, and now he's made it. So I just can't think of anything less than the nuts making that play, especially in this situation with the chip leader being the one who's aggressive to start. I don't know, but maybe I'm wrong, and maybe that's why I only make it to seventh on the tournaments and never actually win them anymore. But you know, I am cashing a lot, so I'm not totally an idiot. So I can't feel like this hand is a bluff, but maybe he has the same hand as us too. Who knows? And he's overvaluing a straight. I don't know.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
That'd be bad. But I'm gonna go with my gut and fold this hand because I really think this guy's got the nut flush.
All right, here's the thing. I was just trying to get us to talk about the hand a little bit longer. I'm definitely folding here.
The show's already an hour and 2 hours long. We need to make it a little longer.
Well, the thing is, this is the problem with playing out of position, and our hero knew this, is that this is the kind of stuff that you could stuck in. Now we're getting a hand where there's lots of hands that could beat us. This guy raises. You know, you could go through everything that we just went through there. And is this guy bluffing? Can he bluff? Does he think is the right amount to bluff? Or does he have a hand that beats me? And, you know, you're out of position, ultimately.
Hate being out of position.
He's got all the power.
At certain moments, and this is not one of them. So, all right, let's have the big reveal here, because I'm starting to get antsy. I'm hoping we didn't make too big of a mistake here.
All right, well, here he says he definitely has the money to call, but he's worked hard to get where he is at the tournament and didn't build his chip stack up by making marginal calls. That's very smart. Been playing for several hours at this point, or actually days, if you want to think about it that way.
Yeah, right.
It's found the zone. My reads have been sharp, and my play has been solid. However, this hand doesn't come down to read. It comes down to a gut feeling. And I've been told to always trust my gut when it comes to poker. The hand just doesn't feel right, Chris.
Yeah.
I think I'm beat by a flush, and after several minutes of tanking, I muck my king high straight, and my opponent scoops the pot. After a review of the hand history, I see that my opponent had stepped out of his regular play, ace of spades, queen of clubs.
Oh, no!
Even though my read was wrong, I made the right play.
Yeah, he still made the better straight, so it felt like it was a hand where you had to have a better hand than us to make that move. I thought it was a flush, though, not Broadway. But hey, he still made the right fold, and that's the one thing I agree with him on this whole hand, was that he made the right play at the end.
Yeah, it's a pretty gutsy raise there, not having spades there. Yeah. I mean, I think you're right, kind of really overplaying that Broadway.
Yeah.
Because we very easily could have had the flush the way we played it, too.
Yep, very well. But, you know, here's the thing is, he made the right play, regardless of how he got there, and he actually saved himself some money early on, but then lost, I think he bet too much on the end.
Yeah, probably ended up losing more at the end. But the good news, Chris, is that he went on to win this tournament.
Wow.
And $7,500,000 of fake money added to his profile.
Wow.
So it may sound silly, but it was a great accomplishment and really did boost my confidence in my game. So see, all right. So.
Yeah, you know, I used to play the video game poker stuff, too. I used to play, like, the championship poker on, like, PlayStation 2 and just to see how really bad the random card generator was and stuff. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. Those things are a lot of fun. And you can learn a lot from just, like, the flow of the way the poker tournament goes and the amount of money you bet and, you know, bet sizing and things like that, too. So they're definitely good for instruction to a point as well. So I think it's good that he's doing that and not going out there and just losing money for no reason. You know what I mean?
And he concludes the letter with saying, I actually attribute this fold to your help on the hands of the week.
So, awesome.
Pat yourself on the back there, Chris.
All right.
It snowed another one.
Way to go, Mal Mal.
All right. Well, Malcolm, not only you can add to that $7.5 million in your profile with a free download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net. Sounds like you're somebody that's very interested in reviewing your hand, so we'll hope you enjoy that excellent product from element26.net numerals.
All right. Another good show, nice refresher course, and hopefully people didn't fall asleep behind the wheel after eating all that tryptophan. Because I know most of our listeners listen to our show in the car. So thanks for joining us today. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.